is the Day Zero update for April 22nd, 2018. I'm Filippo D'Analfo.
I'm Brandon Parkin.
I'm Chris Elogi.
And I'm Dan Red Victoria.
Yeah, bit of a slow week this week, I'll fully admit. Mm-hmm. Was pondering whether or not we should even do a show this week, but thought, yeah, what the hell, there were a couple of stories worth talking about, so may as well do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so here we are, and we're going to talk about stuff. Yeah, oh, and Battletech, because that's the thing that's coming out this week. So right off the top, yep. I want to mention that the long-awaited Battletech revival from Harebrained Schemes. This is the tactical RPG-type game that's coming out for the PC from the developers of the Shadowrun Returns PC game. It's coming out the 24th, so Tuesday. You can get it on GOG, you can get it on Steam, you can get it pretty much anywhere PC games are sold, and yeah, you should really take a look at it, because it looks awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually kind of liking that there's a Battletech resurgence happening right now. It's not just that game, but there's also, you know, MechWarrior 5 Mercenaries, which Piranha is working on, and there's a third one that we have no idea about, so yeah, it's kind of cool, and well, considering it's like Game of Thrones in space, it kind of makes sense that it would start gaining some popularity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's coming out. And, yeah, we've been playing some stuff. Like, for me, it's been mostly Mega Man. Disappearing platforms. God damn it.
Lots and lots of Mega Man.
Yeah. I seriously want to, like, smack the person who thought those disappearing platform puzzles were a good idea.
Yeah, and I have a feeling it's going to be more than one person, because for some reason those were really prominent in old Nintendo.
Yeah, and they were, I mean,
in places that they didn't belong, like, say, Double Freaking Dragon, for example.
Yeah, I remember that. They weren't quite, you know, that irritating back in that game, but yeah, in Mega Man they're like... there's entire rooms where it's just nothing but that. And, yeah. You know, the Legacy Collection actually has, like, a series of challenges for those. Because apparently, you know, unless you... If you hate yourself, well, that's a thing you could do.
Yep.
So, yeah. But, yeah, have I mentioned that I'm looking forward to the X Legacy Collections? Because, yeah, those are... Those
no.
Are really fun.
Yeah. Yes, you've mentioned that before.
Yeah. So yeah, Mega Man Legacy Collections, that's pretty much what I've been doing. And that's, how about you, Brandon?
Yakuza 6. I got Yakuza 6 Friday, and, well, no, actually I got it Thursday. And, you know, I've gone through the first part of the game, you know, the introduction, which is a fairly long, almost like a movie, like it's almost like 20 minutes long. Hmm. And, then I've pretty much wasted my time completely on Fantasy Zone and Virtua Fighter 5.
It's like, story? Yeah, who cares? I want to go play Virtua Fighter.
Yeah. And yes, in this game, as in past Yakuza games, they've got fully playable versions of classic Sega games. Obviously, you got your classics like Space Harrier and Outrun. You've also got Fantasy Zone, which I was especially happy about. That's one of my favorite games of all time. And, of course, you've got a fully playable arcade version of Virtua Fighter 5. Yeah. And, yeah, that's not good, because that you will pretty much waste all of your time on that alone.
That save card that you can carry around with you? In the
yeah, yeah, it does. Hmm. It also reminded me how weird that, you know, facial recognition and shit was like back when Virtua Fighter 5 came out.
Yeah.
It still is.
Yeah. It still looks a little strange.
Yeah, holy crap. It's just, there's a, for what is essentially just like a game that takes entirely in like a few city blocks, there is just a shit ton of stuff to do. And it never gets old.
Yeah, it's like an open world game where things actually happen in that world.
It's basically, this is what sort of Shenmue aspired to.
Yeah,
back in the day, and to be fair, it did accomplish a lot of that. But You know, of course, the big difference here is that unlike in Shenmue, you can't just pick up everything and look at it.
Yeah.
But also the controls don't drive you fucking crazy because you don't have to press you know, you don't have to press the right trigger to move.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, so that's what I've been playing. What about you, Chris?
Hold on, I have a question. Are there any trophies related to the games you can play in the game?
Not only are there trophies, but you will actually gain experience depending on how you fare in the game.
Okay, ordering it now.
Yeah, I need to get
In Virtua Fighter 5, if you beat, like, depending on how many people you beat, you will actually gain experience. So, like, there's like a thing like beat 5 people and beat 10 people. Like that.
Yeah, which are kind of like the achievements in the PS3 version, so it's like, yeah, it's like you kind of have both sets of achievements in there.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty awesome.
So good.
Yeah. So, Chris, we got some?
Yeah, so I have been playing more of the new God of War.
Yeah.
And it is really good. I am still probably fairly early, like maybe 6 or 8 hours in. Something like that. I'm at the lake. That's all I'll say about where I'm at. Yeah, I just basically got the point where I can actually start warping around a little bit. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far. The combat is definitely quite a bit different than the other God of War games. Those were more traditional sort of brawler action games. Focus on combos and all that. Here, it's a little bit more... I'd actually probably liken it to maybe Assassin's Creed Origins, okay. Which was in itself trying to go for a Dark Souls style thing, but without all of the animation priority and all that to it. Mm. Here, I think it does a lot better of a job at it than Assassin's Creed did.
Mm.
So it actually feels good for the most part. And yeah, I'm still kind of getting the hang of it. But yeah, with Atreus, now I've got him upgraded a good bit so he can do some shit on his own and distract enemies and even choke some out so that I can get some attacks on them. Yeah, it's going pretty well. The story is good. There's some pretty cool shit that's happened already. In terms of things that they've shown at some of the first few trailers and demos, I have met the World Serpent that you've seen in the trailer.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty neat thing, because since Kratos is a foreigner to these lands, he does not know how to speak the native tongue. So he basically relies on his son to decipher whatever text is around and whatever people are saying.
Hmm.
That is not in English, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm at a point where we've actually found some stuff that Atreus cannot translate for him. So we have to find ciphers to help him out with that. Yeah, it's been really nice. It has some nice... you earn XP, but you spend it on upgrading abilities. It's not like a traditional level system. So, currently my Kratos is level 2 because I've upgraded his gear enough that he has a power level of 2. Mm-hmm. And the most powerful enemies I've seen so far is level 6, which I decided to try and take him out. Because I almost had it. It was two guys that are really tough. And so just sort of using my abilities in specific ways, trying to take him out. I died probably about 20 times. Still didn't get to it. I was like, God damn it, I'll just come back. I went and found some level 4s, and I managed to take those guys out. But yeah, that's an interesting thing that I like about the game. It's not just traditional a leveling system. Where you just do stuff, and you just automatically get more powerful. Here it's more about upgrading your gear. And some of the gear allows you to attach gems to it that gives you additional bonuses and such. And so you sort of try and set that all up to get the sort of focuses that you want, as well as just deciding what to spend your experience on to upgrade your abilities. So I have Atreus. I've been mostly spending experience on that, just to get him to be more self-sufficient. You don't have to worry about health or anything with him, him dying or anything. Yeah. He goes on his own, and at worst, he's just preoccupied for a few seconds before he's able to go again. But yeah, other than that, it's pretty well done. So far, my favorite character is a guy named Brock. You will, if you're playing that, he is really good. And yeah, it's real nice in the same way that, like Assassin's Creed Origins, you learn a bit more about Egyptian lore and all that. Here, there's a good bit with Norse lore, as well as Atreus keeps a journal that has a bunch of information. So it's like, oh, okay, so this is what this is. These are, you know, different things. And I've gone on some really nice side quests that go on for quite a bit. Maybe in a bit like a Witcher kind of thing, where like you got this main quest going, but you're like, I'll go over here. And you spend like an hour or two doing this whole side quest thing. And it's, yeah, it's really good. Another new game I've been playing is Rogue Aces. It's the new game from the team that made Don't Die, Mr. Robot.
Okay.
Which was a really good arcade game. This is something a bit different. It's a side-scrolling flight combat game. And it kind of goes for a bit more realism in the controls. So if you fly straight up, you'll stall out and lose control of your plane for a few seconds. As it plummets back down, you actually, if you use the right stick, it increases and lowers your throttle, which can be useful for just controlling how high you can go. So if you want to keep yourself lower, you just lower your throttle. That'll keep you more focused where you want to be at. And they definitely have some in-depth stats to show you. For like, oh, if your tail gets damaged, you won't be able to, you know, turn so well. You get your fuel system damaged. You'll lose fuel faster. And it has a whole thing on the top. Shows how much fuel you have left. And it'll also show you a bar of this is how much fuel you'll need to get back to base. To like your aircraft carrier or your base, which is where you land and your ship gets repaired and filled back up. You also have three ships, planes to, so if you crash, you go back to another ship. But there's also a concept of crashing and not surviving, which just ends the whole mission. So yeah, there's like a parachute system. If you crash, your guy pops out and you have to hit the parachute to survive.
Yeah.
If you do, you can go into another plane. Otherwise, you're screwed and start over, which it kind of has like a roguelike kind of system to it. Of where you have sort of progressive stuff, and I'm at the point where I can pick a perk before I start. And you also pick up more just as you kill other planes, take them down. They'll pop out this sort of supply box out the back that gives you a random perk. Sometimes it'll be like, oh, increased firepower, faster speed, better turning, that sort of stuff. And I have gotten far enough in that. They call them campaigns, even though there's not really much of a story. It's just your, like the general or whatever that's in charge of the whole operation just gives you new things to do after you do complete these objectives. Just keeps giving you constantly, and I think at a certain point you take over one of the other bases by just destroying the buildings and such from the opposing army. That gives you sort of a new starting point, and I think that's where my next campaign starts from. So you don't necessarily start from scratch the entire time unless you want to. I think that's sort of an arcadey thing that has where you can start over from scratch and build up more perks and such if you want to, or you can start a little bit further and give yourself maybe easier chance to get further in. But yeah, it's really cool. It's on PS4 and Vita. I think Steam as well. I'm not 100% sure. But it's on sale, I think, until Tuesday. For, I think it's $10.49? $10.39. 20% off for our PS Plus members. It's $13 regularly. Yeah, it ends on the 25th. It's a really nice game.
$13 is a weird price.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, their other game was, I think, really cheap.
Hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I got trying to find this stupid game. Let's see. Don't die, Mr. There we go. Hmm. Eh, I'll figure it out. But yeah, as for other stuff, I've been playing some more Sea of Thieves. Yeah, their other game was $4. So I think they're put a bit more time and money into it, and they're charging something a little bit more for that, which is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
definitely it's... looks like a more substantial thing.
Yeah, well, I'm not really complaining about the price, merely about the number, which is just kind of, you know, really, you don't typically see 13 as a price.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, lots of weird prices these days. But these guys are also from the UK, so it might be, they set their main price to be like a standard price in the UK.
Yeah.
Just translated it for over here.
Yeah, makes sense.
Versus like making it $10 here and then making it whatever over there.
Yeah, could be.
Like a lot of people do, it's like, oh, it's $60 here, so obviously it's going to be $60 over there. You know, euros don't work that way.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
So they complain about how retail is always cheaper than digital.
Yeah.
Because retail doesn't give a shit. They just fucking sell your shit for whatever they want.
Yeah,
so I've been playing more Sea of Thieves, completing some more of the Gold Hoarder quests. Just been fine. I ran into a jerk. He was on his own solo ship. So I completed a quest, brought my two chests back to the vendor, sold them. I went back to my ship, turned around, and he was strafing it, shooting cannons at it. Like, no real reason to attack me, because I'm not doing anything. He just wants to be a dick. And so I sat there, watched it sink. I think I was playing one of the instruments while I was doing it, because, like, it doesn't really mean anything. I can just get the ship to respond whenever I want, and I don't lose anything. But it's, There's so little permanence in that game that it's nothing really means. Like, doing that shit just doesn't really mean anything. The only way you lose anything is if you're trying to bring stuff back, chests or whatever, to sell and get your reputation up, and somebody just ganks you right there. But otherwise, they're just being dicks.
Yep.
And that's just not fun, but at a certain point, he decided to try and kill me. I was like, okay, this is a weird thing. You've just shot down my ship. I don't lose anything out of this. And so I decided to board his ship. I killed him. What else did I do? I took his ship, tried to crash it onto the beach, and he came back. I shot at him a bunch, then he just killed me. I was like, okay, that was a thing. Then it spawned me on a random island, like not an outpost island, but a regular island. That was weird. So I just went back and started up another voyage, which had me do three islands. One of them I could tell was an island that has cannons on it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go to this one first, because if I get fucking killed there by assholes, no harm, no foul, really. I probably lose the voyage, but other than that, it's not a big deal. So I get there, and I see a ship taking off. It's a big ship for a squad, so I'm like, okay, I'll hang back. I do that, they go away, they don't go after me. Then I find, when I go over to where I'm supposed to be, there's a guy hanging around that just stuck around. And I could tell because he's talking on his mic. So I can hear him. He comes up, or he is hanging out in the water, going over towards this mermaid. I think his ship got destroyed or something, I don't know. So I was in the water, I saw him going towards my ship, and so I went back, tried to shoot him. I think he killed me. Then he just like left my ship there. When I got back, I don't know what the hell was going on there. But then, so I decided to sail away, because somebody was shooting cannons towards my ship, so I was just getting out of there. And eventually came back because it was starting to get dark. So I was like, all right, I assume whatever they were doing, they got bored at this point. Didn't hang around after a few minutes. Went and did my thing. And I could still hear the guy talking. I didn't know where the hell he was. I figured the proximity chat was not that great where you could hear like across an entire island or anything. I didn't see him in the water or anything because at a certain point you can actually see their gamer tag. So that was weird. I just got my chest, put it on my ship, and left. Like, at a certain point, I couldn't hear him anymore. It's like, that was real weird. I just did my other stuff on there and just took it back. But yeah, I got that on video, at least the jerk part. So I might have to put that up on my YouTube channel. But other than that, that game's okay. I got the level 10 on the gold hoarder stuff and got a gold compass. Doesn't really mean anything. Yeah, it's
cool looking compass,
I guess. I don't know. The compass is, I don't really use it because I, all the time I'm using it is if I'm looking at the, when I'm steering the ship, which there's a compass right next to the wheel.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't use this thing ever. I guess I haven't gotten far enough where you might actually get challenges for where it's like, oh, you need to hit, go 5 paces north or something like that. It's like, maybe I'll use it then, but at this point I'm not going to get that far because it's not that interesting of a game. As for other stuff, I've been playing some more Fallout 3. Now that I got all the DLC, I just continued that. And I found out where I was at, which was heading towards finding the dad. Which is in this weird simulation thing.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
That is one messed up section.
Yeah. Where the guy that's running the whole thing has his own character in there and asks you to just kind of make everybody's lives miserable and then kill them all. At a certain point, I was just like, yeah, this is kind of stupid. I know there's a failsafe thing in the abandoned house. You can just go there and do the code, and then you can sort of get out of it without really doing any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Because you lose a lot of karma doing that stuff. It's like 50 karma for each thing you do. And I think 400 more for killing all the people. Otherwise, so I just reverted to a save before I went in and just went over to the failsafe thing and executed the Chinese invasion simulation thing.
Yeah.
Which kills everybody else, but you get positive karma because you don't play into his game.
Yeah.
And in the sense that also traps him in there because he cannot get out.
Yeah.
I guess when you do that, so then you get out. He's like, oh, there's the dad. And I've been following him across the wasteland, which means tons of monsters and such have been coming and attacking him. And raiders, once we got past the citadel. And then we found some super mutants up on this, like walkway between two skyscrapers. And so he goes and runs up there and gets knocked out because he aggroes on anything nearby. And so I had it handled. Now he's unconscious up there, and I have no idea how to get up there. So that's peak Fallout, I guess. The AI did something weird, and now he's knocked out. Like, that's the whole point of the game is the dad, at least at this point. So I have to go figure out how to get up there.
Yeah.
Or I just revert to a previous save.
By the way, the dad is played by Liam Neeson.
Yeah, I seem to recall that. yeah, it's pretty good. I'm just kind of at a weird point where I am pretty much full up on good weapons and such, and so this whole trek has just been kind of weird invincibility because they generally aggro on the dad.
Yeah.
And I can sit here and just take shots at the enemies as they come up. And Yeah, it. There's no real tension when you got something like that going on. Since like I finally met the centaurs, which is really freaking looking Dead Space like mutants, as well as super mutants, like not really freaking out about it because they're just gonna focus on the dead. I can just take them out. It's real weird, weird way that kind of breaks the game, even though it's like a main quest. But yeah, that's been pretty good. I've also been playing some more Tesla versus Lovecraft. I finally beat the whole first section of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm in the Aether Realm, where there are Aether Crystals, which you collect to upgrade some of the perks and such in that game. Yeah, I still have that whole section of the campaign to go through, as well as the... I forget what it's called, the Lovecraftian realm as well. There's another whole level of that. That's like good 40 more levels. It's kind of all just playing the same stuff over and over again.
Yeah, just with a different backdrop.
Yeah. Except it's not really a different backdrop, really. It's kind of the same levels, just it's a little bit pinker, I guess, for this Aether realm.
Okay.
It's kind of weird. If you go into the sort of cliffs and such, there's just, like, fire coming out of them now. Yeah, because now I got these goggles that let me see the Aether crystals, which I can destroy, and then I collect the crystals they contain. I also played some more of the actual arcade mode, where it just kind of throws random waves of enemies at you. And that's been pretty good. I'm in, like, the 300s, top 300s of the world. Mm-hmm. The game sold that well, so it's not too big of an accomplishment. But, yeah, that's been pretty good. And, yeah, I think that's largely been it. How about you, Dan Reb?
I also got God of War, and then as I was playing it, I was like, these controls aren't working for me because I'm still playing Ni No Kuni 2. So I... So I thought to myself, I'm going to finish Ni No Kuni 2 first. So unfortunately, I didn't do that before getting God of War, but I'm pretty damn close now. I'm like... 25 hours in, just finished chapter 8. There's a secret trophy where chapter 9 should be, and there's no other story-related trophy there, so I'm assuming this is largely it. As Brandon's been saying in previous episodes, as far as the story goes, it's not really all that long, especially when compared to the original game, where the original game was easy at least 40, 45 hours. This one's like 25, 30, depending on how fast you go through everything. And the main thing that'll take your time is just... building your kingdom, and that's going to be done through a whole shitload of side quests, which are actually not really all that annoying to do.
No.
Like, when you first start the game, you're like, man, this is a huge world, but it really isn't. Maybe, like, as far as, like, geographical size it is, but because of the pretty robust warping system, you can get to anywhere within, like, you know, the snap of a finger, the blink of an eye, and... Yeah, so a lot of the side quests are very Animal Crossing-y. There's a whole lot of, like, fetch quests. And the only thing that I'm really having trouble with are the skirmish battles that you have on the world map. These are pretty weird. They're actually my least favorite part of the game, but basically you have your army, and you go around the world map fighting different armies as well. And you have, like, four... clusters or groups of people with their own strengths, like these guys attack with swords, these guys attack with bows and arrows, some use magic, some are more for defense and things like that, and it really tries its best to be sort of a MOBA strategy game.
To be Total War.
Yeah, and
kinda.
It's super simple, but it just doesn't really do it all that well. I've probably only done like less than five of these things, and they just really aren't all that fun, and I don't know how you actually get better. Is it through, like, being prepared through the menus, or do you actually have to do a lot of these and get experience?
It's, you have to, well, basically, your first and main way of getting experience is, yeah, you gotta go do the fights, but you also have two other options, which is you can, obviously, you can, like, boost yourself. Before you start the actual conflicts. And also in your kingdom, they have the barracks and the training grounds that you build up, and you do research there, and that also helps.
Okay, gotcha. But yeah, a lot of things you do to build your kingdom, you know, they're not only to make your kingdom look good. Mine's in level 3, by the way, which I believe is like the last one before getting the biggest one possible. And whatever you do each quest, you either get things like money, have people join your kingdom to do specific tasks, or there's also a lot of quality of life improvements. Like you can make your character run faster. You can get access to better weapons and other equipables. You can just make the game a whole lot easier than it already is. And they're actually really cool. The only problem, I think, is the fact that there's a warm-up period as you try to get everything done. And it ends up really feeling like a mobile game without any microtransactions. I mean, there are, in the sense that, you know, they're all in-game currency, but it's like, wow, this game really could have been a mobile game if it really wanted to.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I still want to platinum this game, but that'll probably be like an 80-hour commitment, and I really want to get to God of War, so I don't know. I might come back to it. I haven't decided yet, but first things first, that's beating the game, and it's gotten to a point where I actually care about what's going on. Like, in my opinion, while I love Studio Ghibli, like, I'm not in love with the design with the main characters. I've actually been more impressed with the design for the UPCs. Like, it's similar to the Falcom games in the sense where every character in the game who you come across has their own, like, feel.
Story arc.
And story arc. Yeah, it's very similar to that. But here, like, the art with each character, like, is amazing. Not every single character is uniquely designed, but they come pretty damn close, and that's probably the most significant feature within the game's design. Even though Studio Ghibli, or what was Studio Ghibli, isn't as involved as we want them to be. Like, as we mentioned before, there aren't any anime cutscenes or anything of the sort. But anyway, so I did start God of War. I'm like 2 to 3 hours in. I got it on Friday. And yeah, I'm loving this dead simulator. I never thought I'd actually care about Atreus, but he's actually a pretty interesting character, and it looks like there's going to be a lot of growth there, so I'm interested to see how that settles out.
By the way, I don't know if any of you guys who play God of War, the new God of War, have noticed there's a distinct lack of boobs.
Yeah,
so far.
It's mature in the sense that, you know, I want to say most of the developers when God of War first came out were like in their 20s and, you know, in their high sex ways. Yeah. And here it's like, okay, everyone's an adult. They're all they all have children now, so they're reflecting that with the game. So there's a whole lot of more inner maturity going on, but, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Also, you know, there really wouldn't be that much boobs in the forest.
We're in, you know, Viking country, and it tends to be pretty cold there, so.
I think the thing here is that Kratos is kind of just wants to move on with his life.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of, you know, done all he had to do back in the Greek mythology stuff.
Yeah.
And he just kind of wants to, you know, live a life unbothered by deities demanding things of him. Just wants to be with his son and all that.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a pretty interesting title. Like, it's linear to a fault because you can still, like, go through random paths and find chests to break open because, you know, Kratos doesn't just open them, he breaks them.
The chest stuff is the best opening animation around. He just fucking punches the chest through the top of it.
Stupid chest.
And then the climbing is pretty cool too. Like, he starts climbing, all of a sudden Atreus comes out of nowhere and just jumps on his back. Kratos is unaffected. He didn't slow down. He's still a god. About the combat, though, like Chris said, it's very different from the rest of the God of War games, but it still has that cerebral, visceral feel. Like, Whenever you kick ass, it still feels awesome. The only thing it lacks is the combo system, which I don't think anybody really misses.
Yeah, there's a weird kind of juggling system, but that's about it.
So R1 is your weak attack.
R1 and R2.
Yeah, R1 is your weak attack. R2 is your strong attack. You also have your axe, which you can throw like a projectile in any other game. And the thing is, when you throw your axe, it doesn't come back. You can just press triangle, and it'll come back to your hand, and it'll make a whoosh sound, and your controller will vibrate, and it really feels like Thor's hammer. So, yeah, I don't know what Square Enix is doing with their Avengers property, but if Thor has some single-player gameplay in there, they can probably take a hint out of God of War. It's pretty awesome.
Have you found cliffs to just throw that axe off of? Just cliffs. Fucking wing it.
And no, I
call it, and it takes longer to get back because just fucking threw it off a cliff.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of creativity you can use with that axe. I mean, first of all, it's also used to solve bridge puzzles. And secondly, when it comes back, it'll come back through things. So if you're fighting three enemies in the line and you throw your axe first, kill two guys with melee strikes and press the triangle button, it'll come back through those enemies, and it's all just awesome. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back into that game. And yesterday, GameStop was doing a double rewards thing because they fucked up with their system, I guess, a few weeks ago, so they wanted to apologize for offering double rewards for all trades and purchases. Mm-hmm. So I ended up trading a whole bunch of shit. I don't know if I discussed it in the previous podcast, but over the Christmas break, Toys R Us fucked up on their site and made all sorts of things like 80% off. So I bought a whole bunch of Switch games I was interested in but never actually opened. I bought some extra Joy-Cons and things like that. So I traded all that stuff in. And I ended up with like $450 of GameStop credit. And I also had a $100 gift card. So I turned all of that into an Xbox One X. And this is actually a beautiful piece of machinery. I don't know why the actual box is as big as it is, because the main console is actually a whole lot smaller than the original Xbox One, and it's also smaller than the Xbox One S. It's just a whole lot more dense. Like you really feel like you're holding like a big ass moon rock or something. But
I do know why the box is that big.
Okay.
Yeah, it's somebody in the Xbox team was actually talking about it. It was purely for shock absorption.
Yeah, makes sense. Gotcha. Yeah. But yeah, it's a really quiet piece of machinery, and I was really impressed at how fast it just restores your original settings. Like, it took me a while to delete everything on my traded-in Xbox One, and then when I turned on my Xbox One X, and within like 45 minutes, it was already at the condition I needed it to be. Pop in a game, play through it, easy. My only problem was with the menus, but that's always been my problem with Xbox. And I look forward to getting my game on with it. So I played some PUBG, which on Xbox One X is a whole lot better than it was on Xbox One. It's smoother. Granted, some time has passed by. But for the most part, it's still a crazy, janky-ass game. And I don't know when this will take off, especially with Fortnite eating their lunch. But, now that I'm in the 4K side of things, I'm looking forward to what they have to offer. So I'll probably use my Game Pass free trial soon. I'll probably wait until the release of State of Decay before I do that. But, I guess the main thing now when deciding to pick up a PS4 or Xbox One third-party game is, like, do I care more about the graphics here, or do I want the trophies? So, yeah. But, yeah, that's largely been it.
All right, cool. So I talked about Battletech already, so I'll just get past that. And we'll get to Housemarque, because they've just announced their new game. If you remember a while back, they said they were going to be refocusing on gameplay, basically, and just figuring out what they wanted to be. So they've announced their new game's called Storm Divers. There's a little teaser trailer available.
So is this the sequel to Steel Diver or Helldivers?
Neither.
Damn it.
Neither.
Yeah, this is Housemarque original. we know very little about it other than the it's, you know, kind of got planes and stuff. So, yeah, very. It looks kind of cool. I don't know what to make of it. All I know is it's multiplayer focused, and that means I probably won't ever play it. So, yeah, congrats to Housemarque for basically alienating everybody who might have originally enjoyed your games. So, congrats. Yeah, I really don't like multiplayer games, you know, especially multiplayer only type games, because it's basically just a different spin on a single type of formula. It's just basically kill everybody else, and it's just kind of boring, personally. But what do I know? For all I know, you guys might look at this and think, hey, this actually looks really nice. So I don't know.
I mean, after just watching the teaser, I have no idea what this game is going to be. Like, maybe it will be multiplayer. Like, maybe it will be one of their side scores that I love. But I don't know. It looks nice. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, it does look nice. Just we don't know what it is. So, more information to come, as they say, because they're bringing a little hush-hush on it. So, but, you know, Housemarque is still doing their thing, so chances are it will be a visual feast. So,
it seems like they got a documentary called Name of the Game coming out at some point, which follows the development of Nex Machina and their time working with Eugene Jarvis. Oh. It seems like that would be pretty nice.
Yeah, I'll be watching that.
It's called Name of the Game.
Yeah, there's a little teaser trailer for that on the page as well. So
yeah.
So this just happened yesterday, actually. Valve is acquiring Campo Santo Studios. Well, that did
get the
nowhere.
People who did
Firewatch.
What was it? Firewatch.
Yeah.
And then they're working on In the Valley of the Gods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how Valve is making games.
Yeah, they're just going to get other people to make games for them.
Yeah.
And they're just going to pull a portal, just hire people already working on something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's fair to point out that, no, they're not going to be PC exclusive. Campo Santo has made that clear. So they're still going to be multi-platform. They're just going to be owned by Valve, which is good because, you know, it means that they'll have pretty much all the funding that they could possibly need.
They're probably better at supporting their console releases than Valve ever was.
Probably, yeah.
Because they released that, was it Counter-Strike Go? They released on PS3 and Xbox 360 and then did nothing after that.
Well, it was Counter-Strike. There was that orange box that had a bunch of the games, and then there was Portal 2 that ended up on consoles. And then after that, I think Left 4 Dead 2 as well. But yeah, that's about all that they ended up doing.
Yeah, like after Left 4 Dead games on Xbox, they had to charge for the updates, I think.
Yeah,
because Microsoft couldn't figure out how to make things free, or didn't want to make things free.
Yeah, they dropped that fully.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting news. I mean, you know, I kind of wish them luck. They're a cool studio, even if sometimes maybe they say things that they probably shouldn't. But yeah, let's In the Valley of the Gods actually looks really cool, and I'm looking forward to playing it. So.
Yeah, they get a free set of steak knives with purchase.
Okay.
Because Gabe likes his knives.
Yeah.
That's what he says to all the new employees. I'm guessing.
So.
Yeah, the only bad thing is that game's still coming out in 2019.
Yeah, it's still a little rough.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I'd be fine if you guys just lay low for a while.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll keep working on it, and it'll keep evolving, and... You know, it's going to be good. So, let's see. Capcom is shutting down their Puzzle Fighter mobile game that they just launched.
Yeah. Because apparently they hate money.
Yeah, well, they hate money, and apparently they want to work on Dead Rising for some reason.
Yeah, it's a real weird thing. They're shutting it down on July 31st. No more in-app purchases after today, I guess. They are stopping that tomorrow. On the 23rd. And yeah, I guess the mobile game fans did not like it because they tried to monetize everything they could possibly monetize in it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. The weird thing is why does this game need to be shut down so they can work on another Dead Rising?
How many
people are working on this game?
It couldn't be that much, unless the Dead Rising that they're working on is mobile. So,
It says here that It's no longer being available on the app stores after July 1st. People that already have the game get 10,000 in-game gem currency and are making the DLC characters, which is Regina from Dino Crisis, Dr. Wily from Mega Man, and Ada Wong from Resident Evil 4 available for free.
Yep.
And they're also putting the soundtrack on SoundCloud. Okay, I guess this is Capcom Vancouver, the Dead Rising people. I don't know why they moved them from mobile game to for Dead Rising 4 to mobile game.
And then now back to Dead. Whatever.
Maybe they'll figure out a mobile game they should, or a Dead Rising game they can make that people want to play.
Yeah.
Dead Rising 4 did not do well.
No.
Not at all.
Alright. So, okay. And in other news, okay, yeah, I saw this and I thought I wouldn't have put it on there, but, well, it ended up here. So Call of Duty Black Ops 4, it's not basically not going to have a real traditional single-player campaign anymore by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
It's...
And, man, Activision done fucked up.
I don't know. I think...
Yeah, I don't know about that either.
To
because,
exactly their audience.
I mean, yeah, Black Ops has never really been big on single-player to begin with. Their most popular thing has always been the zombie thing. So
actually,
then,
Black Ops has probably been their most successful campaign stuff.
Yeah,
well, I don't
they
know.
They've really gone out of the way to create really interesting campaigns and do some weird stuff. Like, 3 had a whole weird, your character's in a coma, and you're actually playing a simulation of a thing. Like, going real weird Matrix-y kind of thing to it. And
yeah.
2 had... I think the potential, like, multiple storyline stuff where you, depending on what you did in certain situations, the story could branch different ways. It's been really kind of their weird experimental thing. Mm. Whereas the rest of the games kind of were more traditional in that sort of Call of Duty 4 style campaign.
Yeah.
Mm. And so I've seen a lot of people are like, well, I mainly play for the campaign, so I guess I'm out on this one. I assume they're going to be making more than enough backup on multiplayer and zombie stuff.
Yeah.
As well with a rumor that they're going to be doing like a Battle Royale mode out of this.
Probably.
As well.
That's not
everybody's
do
doing Battle Royale now.
Yeah.
If they do that, then they fucking made bank. God damn it.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I mean, it's... I'm sure Activision knows exactly, like, how many people play what parts of the game at this point. So it's like...
Yeah.
It's pretty easy calculus for them to make, you know, okay, we could spend all of this money doing a really high-quality single-player campaign, but if only 10% of the people are actually going to bother going through it, yeah, what's the point? So
yeah, I know people have been wanting them to sort of split them up, the campaign and the multiplayer zombie stuff,
yeah,
and offer them separately so that the people that want their campaign thing could get that and not have to pay for the multiplayer, which is not great for Activision.
Yeah,
because they want your whole 60, no matter how much you play of it.
Yeah.
The other weird thing is, there's also the rumor that Modern Warfare 2 remaster is coming with this game, which is not going to have multiplayer. So it seems like the yin and yang kind of thing there.
Yeah.
You get your campaign from replaying Modern
game.
Warfare 2,
mm-hmm.
and if you want multiplayer, it's all in the new stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess what the only benefit is it would avoid the thing that people don't like about Modern Warfare Remastered, which is that they put microtransactions in that game.
Yeah, and crafting.
They put, like, loot crates and all that in there to make you pay for it. And even charge you for the fucking map pack that they released for Modern Warfare, which it's like $15 in 2018. It's like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
People are still buying it. That's why they're doing it.
Yeah. And I know people.
You pay $40 for the game and $15 for the map pack. It's like, what? That's not how anybody else does this.
And of course, they're going to do the same thing with, like they did with Infinite Warfare, bundle the Modern Warfare 2 remastered in initially so that they get the bump in sales and then unbundle it later on.
Yeah. It's a real weird thing what's going on with this game. Because apparently, they've just been having trouble with the campaign, trying to figure out what they were going to do. And so that's probably led to that sort of decision, as well as just getting the remaster of Modern Warfare 2 in there, done in time.
It's called running out of ideas. That's what usually happens when a series is about to be run into the ground.
Yeah. So. By the way, for anybody who's wondering, You're probably looking at that link and thinking, wait, that's not the Roman numeral for 4. Yeah, we know, but Activision's dumbass decided to write it that way, so...
Yeah, it could also just be, like, the... I don't know what the...
Marks.
The way of doing that is, like, redo the 1, 2, 3, 4, and then slash through it.
Yeah.
That could be what they're doing. I don't know.
Could be.
Yeah, I don't think... I'm not giving them the benefit of the doubt here.
I think they're just saying it's real stupid either way, and we don't like having the I and the V.
Yeah.
So we're just going to go...
4 things, yeah. That makes... Well, that makes more sense as anything
It's already
else.
A stupid Cody. Game. It's going to be a stupid game anyway.
Yeah. Just
lean into it a little bit.
Yeah. So, right.
But I guess they're going to have an actual reveal for it on May the 17th.
Yep.
So we'll find out next month what the hell's going on with this game.
Yep. In other news, Magic the Gathering Arena is getting an expansion pack with the Dominaria cards. Pat could probably talk a little bit more about this in detail if he were here, but he's not. But what I will say is what's kind of significant about this is that the physical release of the cards tends to usually come a long ways before they end up in the digital version of the game. In this case, they're only a couple of days apart. So, yeah, that's kind of interesting, and it maybe shows a new direction for Wizards of the Coast and their physical and digital games maybe might start combining.
Possibly.
It's... I like it. I kind of like it. So, you know, this apparently Arena is going to be kind of the, you know, the be-all, end-all Magic platform for online. So it kind of makes sense that you'd want to keep it current with rules and the card packs. So, yeah, I'm finding that kind of cool that they're going in that direction and not having to, you know, keep people who just want to play the digital version in the dark for a year before they end up with the new expansions. So... good stuff there, and yeah, unless you guys have any other things to say about that, there's not really much more to talk about there.
Nope.
Yeah.
Do they do anything where you buy the packs in real life, you get them in the game?
As far like as codes? I don't know.
That seems like a good way to get people to have the real life stuff in your game.
Yeah. That would be an interesting logistical problem to solve. And how would you do that, considering the packs are completely random? Well, at least they're supposed to be. But yeah. Next up, we got a Platinum Games twofer. First off, we want to acknowledge that the Wii U evacuation project seems to be continuing.
Yeah.
With Platinum Games looking to bring the wonderful 101 to the Switch, which would be a really good thing to do.
Yes, it would. Because that game was actually really good, and it is wasted on the Wii U.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anybody played that game.
Yeah, which is a shame, because, again, actually pretty good.
See, what I can find, 2013, the Wonderful 101 has sold a mere 5,258 copies in Japan. I guess right around its launch period.
Yeah. That's not a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, this game's the kind of game that it was really good. It was just on a system that nobody gave a shit about.
Exactly.
I think it would do incredibly well on the Switch, especially with the base that the Switch has now and is continuing to build. That game could get a real legitimate second shot at success here.
Yeah, Wonderful 101 got outsold its first week by Mario Kart 7 on the 3DS. Which had been out for about 2 years at that point. But that's also how well Mario Kart 7 was still doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mario Karts tend to be pretty consistent. They kind of always sell. That's pretty much the thing with Nintendo properties is they never really go out of style. They just keep selling.
Yeah, the only stuff here that wasn't released right around then is that in a Taiko Drum Master for the Wii.
Hmm.
It came out in 2012.
Yeah.
Taiko Drum Master Wii Super Wonderful Edition.
That's... about as Japanese title as you can get.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so, the Wonderful 101 was a fantastic game, so if they want to bring it to Switch, they absolutely should. I mean, there are a whole lot of other bad decisions you can make, and this wouldn't be one of them.
Yeah.
Nope.
So, yeah, look forward to that.
Was that a touch game? Did that use touch at all?
I don't...
I believe
I think it did in some of the combat, but
I'm curious to see what they would do to adapt that for traditional controls.
Yeah. So
they'll find a way.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
When there's a will, there's a way.
They'll sell 20-fold whatever they did on the Wii U.
Probably sell, you know, a couple hundred thousand copies, which would be a pretty good outing, I guess. Other Platinum news, they've announced a new mobile game for iOS and Android called World of Demons. It's an action game. Don't know much about it. So.
Nope.
They're working with DNA.
Yep.
So they found the right company. They can help get on there, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how their style of action game works on a touchscreen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering what they're even going to do. It's a lot of touching, probably. Lots of swiping. Maybe a little wiggling.
Yep.
Yeah, it looks like it has the virtual buttons on it.
Yeah.
Ew.
Ugh.
I hate those.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can sync up a Bluetooth controller and play it that way, but yeah. That would be a smart thing to do.
And I guess it also has monster collecting in it.
Oh, because of course it would.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think you have, like, monsters that help you out, that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's got kind of a, Okami style look to it.
Yeah.
That kind of cell shading kind of look to it. Which looks real neat.
Yeah.
I just wish it was on a phone.
Yeah. So, oh well.
Is Okami on Switch yet?
I think it was
announced for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was part of the last Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
It's coming sometime this summer.
Gotcha.
In news that, well, I would guess if we were talking about this in the 90s, would have been like, no, this is never going to happen. But now things have changed. So Night Trap 25th Anniversary is making its way to a Nintendo console.
Oh my God, who cares?
It's yeah, console that's warriors.
That's a thing that happened.
Now it's like, what's Night Trap?
Night Trap, but this is
Windows Media Player game.
It's kind of a game, I guess. You like look at videos and make sure that the girls don't get attacked or something. But
you have to remember like the specific code for each room.
Yeah,
to activate the trap.
Yeah, it's
you get punished for actually watching the cutscenes.
Yeah,
don't watch these girls dance in the living room. You're supposed to take out the stupid zombies. It looked terrible because it's the fucking 90s FMV game.
Yeah. They really need to make like a documentary about how that game was made and the controversy that came from it.
I want to say that's in this.
Yeah,
I want to say that they have a bunch of video extra stuff and documentary stuff on there.
Yeah. We've actually, we've had the people who did that documentary, the My Life in Gaming guys. We've had them on the show. They're the ones who did the Night Trap 25th Anniversary documentary.
So, yeah.
Yes, you can also find it on YouTube.
Yeah. YouTube on their channel.
That was a roundabout way of saying that exists. We had them on the show. You should go watch it on YouTube.
Well, I don't blame you for missing it because it's like these guys post a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure Night Trap wasn't one of our topics. So
nope. So yeah. So, okay, I guess the bottom line there is if you have a Switch and you're curious about Night Trap, you can now probably get it if you really want to. So there.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can get it on some other platform without a Switch tax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. Next up, we got Warhammer 40K Inquisitor devs are announcing something. Oh, they're delaying it. 90 hours. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they put out this announcement for Warhammer 40,000 Inquisitor Martyr. Announced it would be missing its release date. Apologized to fans and saying they would be working 90-hour weeks for the next few weeks to get it out in time for the next planned release date. Fans were obviously not happy at the...
Because that's the kind of a shitty joke to make in the current environment, like, seriously.
Well, it wasn't even necessarily taken as a joke.
Yeah.
So people are like, let's see here, one fan on the Steam forums said, do you use a whip? Another guy said, I'm looking forward to the game, but I don't want to develop a team of human beings to suffer like that so I can get my entertainment a month or two sooner.
Yeah.
I get impatient and frustrated by delays sometimes, but pushing your staff that hard for that long, we will survive the delay. Please don't make your staff suffer through it. Mm. Which then they decided to update the announcement and remove the 90-hour work week things, saying, we don't do 90-hour work weeks. It was meant as a joke, and I removed it from the original post already. The wording was often misleading. We are treated more than well at NeoCore Games. Mm. Like, it should have been pretty obvious if it had anybody that wasn't.
Should have sent that through PR. It's like,
yeah.
Maybe don't.
Don't forget that recently that, you know, some of the folks in the gaming world have started unionizing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, like, you know, a joke about 90-hour work weeks isn't much of a joke when people actually do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or some that actually genuinely have to do it. So.
Yeah.
And it sucks. So. I'm glad it was a joke. It was in ill taste, but at least they're not doing it, so.
Yeah, and I guess somebody from NeoCore sent another update to Polygon here that not only are employees given additional compensation for overtime work, some elect not to work any overtime, and that's fine with management. Let's see, they have 60 employees, 4 producers, 1 publishing lead, and overtime in March amounted to approximately 750 additional hours of work. Or a little over 11.5 hours per employee. They expect the same amount of overtime accrual for April.
Mm.
Overtime pay, vacation time for other periods, or less work time on other days is offered to those who elect to work beyond the standard 4-hour work week. And that's a system they've had for over a decade.
Mm.
So I guess, you know, don't make jokes about you being shittier than you actually are.
Yeah.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah, it's lesson jokes, learned, I guess.
And jokes are supposed to be funny.
Yeah. So, yeah. The thing is, I can totally understand, like, the guy as he's writing this, like, thinking, oh, that's going to be really humorous. People love it. And it's like, wait a minute. You could kind of see the thought process.
Yeah, self-deprecation sort of thing. Except
yeah, exactly.
Nobody else was in on that joke.
Yeah.
That's the problem. You guys know it because you're probably joking about it all the time, but nobody's in the office.
Yeah.
Everyone's just like, oh, 90-hour work week? Fuck you. Don't do that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to our second last topic, and this one's an interesting one. Kotaku and their parent company, well, mostly their parent company, Fusion Media, did a content ID claim on a YouTube channel called Weiss Gaming for one of their Monster Hunter World videos.
Mm-hmm.
The bit in question was the cutscene leading up to the gameplay.
Really?
Yeah. But they said that was a play match to their own Monster Hunter World video. Which, let's be frank here, if you're starting that particular, you know, particular battle, that cutscene is going to be the same regardless of
who. Yeah, I mean, how?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there are no logos or anything that they could say that it comes from us or anything. It's literally the cutscene.
Yeah,
literally. You know, it doesn't matter where you are, you know, who you are, if you're playing that game and you're starting that part, it's going to be that cutscene that doesn't change whatever.
Yeah.
So who the hell at Kotaku thought this would be a good idea?
No, well, this was obviously their parent company using the automated tools that YouTube has. They just basically probably threw their video in, and that particular part of it matched up with this Weiss Gaming video. And so far, I don't think Kotaku is they've actually retracted it. I think they may have at some point, but they didn't, like, you know, take their video down or anything. They just ended up monetizing that bit. But it kind of shows a little bit of a problem with these YouTube tools where, you know, they can. This was probably just a mistake, but there are people who genuinely, like, abuse this kind of shit.
Yeah, no kidding.
Make money on stuff that they have no right to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely seen weird stuff with copyright notifications on YouTube. It's like, oh, this got copyrighted by somebody that has no affiliation with the people that actually own it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm pretty sure that's just the weird, stupid flag on YouTube's end just getting flipped and nobody probably paying attention to that on the end of the people that supposedly copyrighted it.
Yeah.
That's the stupidity of their system.
Yep.
Is that they should have better ways of maybe having a way that if nobody on the supposed claimant actually confirms the thing, it should get reversed.
Yeah. And the claimant would also have to be able to confirm it, like, you know, actually show with documentation that they own the thing.
Yeah.
But that's not part of this system. It's just basically you upload your stuff and, then you can claim whatever you want.
Pretty much.
Yeah. There was one guy who got a content ID strike on a video he put up of 10 hours of white noise.
Yep.
I don't think you could copyright white noise. It's just kind of a thing that happens.
I put up a video for The Crew, the beta. I mentioned this, that it didn't copyright didn't catch any of the music or any visual stuff. It found a random sound effect in the garage.
Yeah.
It's like, your video is no longer viewable on YouTube. It's like, what the fuck is this?
Mm-hmm.
It's really stupid. Nobody should be able to copyright a sound effect that's not like, you know, the iconic like Pac-Man noises, like that sort of shit. Like that people actually know. Nobody fucking knows what this sound effect is in this.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Stupid garage.
Especially when they're part of sound libraries and stuff that pretty much everybody uses. So,
mm-hmm.
Fix your shit, YouTube. No, mm-hmm. I'm not the only ones telling you this. This video, courtesy of Sid Alpha, who's a great guy. Anyway, now let's get on to our big discussion topic. I hope we can deep dive into this, because it's hard to believe, but we're in our fifth year of this console generation.
Yes, we are.
That
is amazing to think.
Yeah. We're 5 years in, and I think I wanted to start off with, so how have things been going in this generation? Compared to what the seventh generation was at 5 years in, I think things actually are maybe a little slower than they were in the seventh gen. And I'm not seeing the huge steps in in technology and in optimizations and stuff like that that we saw with the 360 and PS3 era games at this time. I'll open the floor. Like, what do you guys, where do you think we are at?
I would actually say it doesn't feel like 5 years.
It really,
it feels like we just started like a year or two ago.
Yeah.
But then I'm realize, oh, wait, no, this was 2013.
Yeah.
Like, literally about 2 months ago, we found out the PS4 was going to be the PS4.
Yeah.
And it had a new DualShock. It's like, that's really weird to think about. It's definitely doesn't feel like it. Like, doesn't feel like the Xbox One's, like, weird overhaul, scrambling for the launch, and then subsequent overhauls since then. Have been 5 years worth of that.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, and I think I'm really liking this generation because it just feels like we got off to a pretty good start from the jump. Like last gen, the whole digital part of all this was very slow going. Like XBLA was just doing like one game a week.
Yeah.
And it's like, that would be really fucking stupid now to do that because it's at least like 10 to 15 games a week.
Yeah.
Most times, even during the slow parts of the year.
Yeah. Although, like, towards the end of the Xbox 360's and PS3's life, it was basically, you know, that XBLA and stuff kind of faded out, and, like, a digital platform just in general showed up.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Yeah, the PSP and the 3DS did not launch with digital storefronts.
No.
I got those sometime afterwards.
Yeah. So, yeah, it, basically what happened in this case was, you know, in the last generation, we had all of the infrastructure being put into place, and since the PS4 and Xbox Ones were basically using the same network structure, it wasn't that hard for them to just basically piggyback off of all the work that had already been done.
Yeah, and so, Microsoft's no longer, like, separating games by how big they are.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
If you're this big, you're in XBLA. If you're this big, you get into, I don't know what their digital retail stuff was called. Games on demand?
It's like games on demand.
And then it's like, oh, everything else, we don't know what the fuck we're doing here. You got to fit into these other small spaces or else get
there's
the fuck
still
out.
That creators club thing that they do. That
nobody pays any attention to.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody cares about that.
Any dev worth their salt is qualified to not have to do that.
Yeah.
And so it's really the hobbyists that are on there. And
you get
stuff like that Jake Paul game or Logan Paul or whatever.
Logan Paul game.
Really
fucking stupid thing, which got pulled, but that shows you sort of the level of
weeks.
It was like some fucking like really probably did not take more than a few hours to make that thing.
No.
And it looked like it.
Yeah, it just slapped
like some Unity thing.
Unity assets.
Yeah, it's real weird, but everybody else can pretty much get on PSN and Xbox Live proper releases without too much trouble these days.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of leads us into this whole Microsoft versus Sony debate, because they've both taken kind of different approaches to how they've handled this console generation in general. Yeah, Microsoft, they went in behind because of their massive blunder that they
fucked it up
with.
Worse than anything.
Oh, yeah.
Since the Sega Saturn, I think. They're like, oh, and it's out now. Wait, what?
Yeah, they almost made that level of stupidity, but, well, it was only slightly less than that. And they've been kind of walking it back ever since. They had that massive 180 leading up to launch. And since that, and since Phil Spencer took over, he's basically been trying to be as consumer-friendly as it possibly could be.
Yeah.
They're really basically, you know, 2014, 2015, you could basically consider it like the Xbox One relaunched itself. Because, yeah, that's kind of what did happen. There was a whole new shift in attitude. And I think, though they don't have the numbers, they're still behind with they're still behind Sony.
Yeah, because of that bad launch, they just don't release numbers now.
Yeah, they just don't release numbers
now. It's like, here's our monthly active users, and it's like, that's only valuable to publishers and developers.
Yeah.
That means nothing to us.
Yeah.
Yep.
But they're still viable. I think, you know, I'm not sure how much the Xbox One has been selling, because they're not...
I assume it's better than the original Xbox, but not as good as the 360. I think it's where they're at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're in a place where they're just fine.
Yeah. They're just fine. That's about all we can say about that. Whereas Sony is doing more than fine, and as a result, I think their cracks are starting to show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're looking at doing... They're a little bit complacent, I would say, and their quality, especially on PSN, is actually starting to slip. There's a lot more really, really crappy stuff starting to show up on the PlayStation Store.
Life of Black Tiger.
Well, yeah, that's the extreme example. But there's other stuff in there. Fireman Simulator or Horse Racing 2016.
The
or,
Skylight Free Range guys, they put out a new game.
Yeah.
Doggoned.
Yeah.
I want it. Because I want to see what the fuck this thing is. I couldn't tell from the screenshots.
Yeah.
It looked like it was a weird fighting game, but I think it's actually an action game.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's half off for launch. But you know how that's
not a good
sign. The confidence they have in their game.
Yeah. The only thing I can say about Sony that they have been quite consistent at is yeah, they still do release quality stuff as far as their first party goes. It's just, I think the cobwebs are starting to show up on their platform as far as the infrastructure stuff goes. PSN is still just jank as fuck. Oh, I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that.
Mm-hmm.
No, it definitely feels like they've got a system in place that has been there for a while.
Yeah.
They maybe need to, I don't know about like start over again, because I don't know how easy that would be.
I think the bottom line here is it works. The thing is, like, it's just not as good as it could be. But then, like, I think about ways that can make it better, and then I look at what Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo all have, and honestly, none of them are that great.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, is they're all three are not great with the whole thing as a whole. They have their core competencies. Microsoft's good at making everything kind of stable. You can't always do everything you want with it, and it bugs out at times. For me especially, I had an update for, I think, was it Conan Exiles I had an update for? Something free up 0K.
Yeah, that still happens. So,
like, that's... What? I took a screenshot. I was like, so you're saying
how
I'm okay?
Do that?
I'm okay, right? No, free up 0 kilobytes. Like, what the fuck do you mean? Yeah, it's real weird. Yeah. And whenever I click on a help button in a game or something, and it brings up Edge, I'm like, I have gone the wrong way on this. I just wanted a quick bit of help, and you're making me do something with Edge, and that's not okay.
It brings up a web browser, and it's like, yeah, it really takes you out, because it's like, it's not what you're looking for.
I don't want to navigate the actual web. I just wanted...
Yeah, just
I wanted
a quick dialogue box. Yeah. It shows me what I want.
Yep.
Yeah, just tell me what the hell you wanted. I didn't want to get into a long conversation. This is... Just text me. Text me what's wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys are like me when it comes to this, but it's like when I am wanting to play a game, I turn on my PS4. When I want to watch a movie, I turn on my Xbox One.
Mm. I don't turn on neither for movies. I go to my PS3. Yeah.
I have Netflix on my PS4, so...
Yeah.
And the one nice thing I found is that on PS3... You don't have to be signed into PSN to launch Netflix.
Yeah.
You can just log into Netflix without it. It's like, oh, that's nice, because I like logging out so people don't know I'm doing stuff, just to make sure I don't get any like invites or notifications or whatever.
Yeah. And I think they actually changed that requirement on the PS4 recently, but could be wrong about that.
Yeah,
I know that Plex doesn't have that requirement anymore. Yeah. So
I like doing that whenever I'm going to watch video, just so people don't fucking bother me with shit.
Yeah, I just turn off all the notifications, basically.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't care about you guys.
I also just go offline, like on Xbox when I've done that, because it's like, just fucking stop.
Yeah,
I don't need to know this person's on when I'm just watching fucking Who's Line on the CW app. And the CW app's terrible. Like, a lot of those apps are terrible because they just use the same basic framework.
Yeah.
They just plug their own back end into it to push the content.
Hmm.
And it's like the... When it brings you like a list of stuff to watch on the CW app, it goes in chronological order.
Right.
Whereas I want to go in reverse chronological order.
Yeah.
Because the first thing that shows up is the newest thing.
Yeah.
And so I go to watch that, and then it's like, all right, here's a completely different show to watch. Like, what? I wanted to just binge. I have to go all the way to the back of the list and then start from there, and then it goes to the next thing. It's like, this doesn't make sense. This was not made by humans. It was made by nightmare people that built this 5 years ago and haven't touched it since, because everybody told them to stop.
Yeah. You can tell which apps have effort put into them and which don't.
Yeah.
You know, you've got like, the Netflix app is pretty spectacular on, well, whichever platform you're using it on. It just works.
Yeah.
Plex app is a disaster on the PS4, but spectacular on the Xbox One.
Yeah.
So there's that. The Amazon Prime app is pretty much the same wherever you go. So, you know, as far as content goes, it's really hit or miss. But yeah, if I want to play a game, as far as, you know, multi-platform goes, I'll end up always turning on the PS4. And the Xbox One usually only gets turned on for Microsoft-specific stuff. So, yeah, that's kind of strange how that's actually worked out. Because usually, because in Gen 7, it was the other way around for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I played a lot of like the XBLA stuff on Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interesting stuff there. Now it's like this stuff is everywhere else as well, mm-hmm. for the most part, unless it's like a weird indie deal they had. Like, what was the Double Fine game that that they made that was basically XCOM? Someone they kickstarted on the PC version.
My something Chalice.
Yeah, Massive Chalice.
Yeah, like Massive that. Chalice. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's weird that that's never been on anything else but PC and Xbox.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Double Fine usually likes to bring their stuff to a bunch of places.
Yep.
Yeah. Unless they're specifically partnering with the platform holder, which I guess they might have done for that.
Possibly.
Because I think that was Games with Gold when it launched.
Yeah, it was.
So Kickstarter people were like mad about it. It's like, you got the game to exist because of you.
Yeah.
And you've been able to play this on PC for a while.
Yeah.
And then that's like a lot of their classic stuff is typically just on PS4 and PC.
Mm. Yep.
So yeah, there's lots of weird stuff with that. But yeah, it's like a lot of the stuff I get on Xbox is like, oh yeah, I like Burnout. And I get a little discount because I'm on EA Access. So yeah, I'll get that here.
Yeah.
Or it's like one of their exclusives that I got on the cheap. Because I don't buy retail there, because retail installs are nightmarish on Xbox One. I don't delete them either, because I don't want to go back through that again.
Yeah.
It's like when I got need some space, quick space, I delete other stuff. Mm. It's like, no, I'm not going to delete this install of, especially Quantum Break, because that's like 100 gigs.
Yeah.
Because that was its own nightmare process.
Yeah, 1 terabyte Xbox is like 10% of your space is taken up by one game. It's like, yeah. Yeah, okay.
I got 3 or 4 of those games.
Yeah.
It's like Halo 5, there's Gears 4, those are all 100 gigs.
Mm.
That's the other thing that's weird about Xbox versus PlayStation is, like, Sony's games max out 40 or 50 gigs. That's a lot, but Microsoft has a number that are 100 gigs or more.
Well, I don't know. I have Doom on the PS4, like 75.
I'm talking about strictly Microsoft and Sony's games.
Yeah, okay.
Like Sony, I guess that's more just because they're not attempting to do full 4K.
Yeah.
They're doing the checkerboard stuff that allows them to not be completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think that works well for them. And Microsoft, it works well for those people that want it. But for me that has 1080p, I don't want that.
Yeah.
I want the half step so I can have my space back.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they're doing it just to sell external storage, you know.
So yeah.
That's
pretty much.
That's why I don't have a big external hard drive on my Xbox, because I don't want to give in.
Yeah. I don't want to buy that Seagate game drive that looks just like the Xbox One X. Yeah, that's the thing. It's same color, and it fits in quite nicely, and it's 8 terabytes.
And 10 times bigger should be.
Yeah, which but just just so anybody knows, you don't have to buy special drives. You can get the regular external USB 3 drives.
Yeah, get the regular ones. That's how people upgrade their PS4 hard drives. They buy those externals, rip it out, and I think the external companies are figuring that out, trying to make it harder.
Yeah.
Which is like, you're selling them anyway.
Yeah.
I know you're not getting, you know, the $120 you want for that 4 terabyte hard drive, but you're selling for $80 anyway.
Yeah.
I'll let them do it.
So, yeah.
So people have to, like, almost fucking break their hard drives just to get it out.
Yeah. But anyways. But what we can't forget, though, is that during this generation, we also saw the launch of the Switch.
Yeah, and Nintendo became a contender again.
Yeah, it's really interesting because they did it in such a Nintendo way by doing basically their own thing.
Yeah.
They didn't really care about power. They just basically put a system in there that was a little bit more powerful than the Wii U.
It has a fucking fan that pumps heat out of it. That's a weird-ass thing.
Yeah.
It's like my phone just gets hot. It doesn't have a fucking fan just pumping hot air out of it.
Yeah. It needs it, and even with that fan, the switches still tend to warp.
Yeah,
Actually a thing. So, but what this has done for Nintendo is basically put them right back in the game, and it makes me wonder if the Switch isn't a precursor to something more powerful from them. Maybe in the next generation, they're going to launch alongside Sony and Microsoft with something. I don't know. Obviously, they're not going to call it a Wii U. They're not going to call it a Switch, because that seems to be the branding for that.
Switch U!
Yeah. Oh, God.
Don't give them ideas.
Call it something
it's
like
a completely different thing.
They're
just going to call it the Switch again.
Yeah.
Confuse the hell out of you so you think it's just a controller.
Yeah, so assuming they don't completely fuck up the marketing, and do you think they would do that? A really powerful, you know, system that would put them back on par with the other two and make them, you know...
Well, they've certainly got the financial, you know, they're able to do it financially now, considering how unbelievably, just almost infuriatingly successful that the Switch has been.
Yeah,
infuriatingly successful is a really interesting term, because
they've essentially created a cult.
Yeah,
it's this weird cult that wants everything on the Switch because it's portable to them, and if it's not on the Switch, it might as well be dead.
Yeah.
Well,
the thing is that the Switch has. The thing is, what the Switch offers that none of the other two majors can do is that you can actually play your game on the go.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to, you're not tethered to a television. You can actually take it out and play it wherever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still a big device, though.
Yeah.
The portability is limited to certain subsets of people that are always on public transportation, on flights, or have the ability to bring it in a backpack or some sort of case like that.
Yeah, and as it seems to show, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, there's a lot of people like that in, like, California. There's a lot of commuter stuff, New York, New Jersey, Boston, all around
all over the place.
There's a lot of places, and it's like, I drive myself. I'm not going to try and play a Switch while I'm driving.
Yeah.
There's enough crazy people out there, I don't need to join them.
Yeah.
It's funny you guys mentioned the cult thing. I mean, when I was at GDC a few weeks ago, out of like almost every interview I saw between developer and developer and whoever else was there, they'd be like, "So when's it coming out on Switch?" And you'd either come out with a blank stare, you'd come out with, "Oh yeah, we're definitely in talks with Nintendo about getting this done." It's like you can almost say that about every fucking game coming out now, especially with the indie developers, because as most of us know, the indies are definitely killing it on Switch. Like every other day, we're seeing announcements of, "Oh yeah, we're selling four times as much here on the Switch than we are on every other platform combined." And the thing is, like, the console has finally been out for more than a year, and we haven't seen, like, any shortage of these things happening. So, like, it has to stop eventually, but when? Or is it?
Yeah, because it feels like the first year of the Wii, where Nintendo had a lot of good stuff come out that first year. You know, Twilight Princess, Mario Galaxy, Metroid Prime 3, a lot of good stuff that made people think it was the best thing ever. Third parties were doing pretty well, but they were still hesitant to put their full development effort on that stuff. And then there were the smaller publishers putting out their carnival games and whatnot that just sold fucking gangbusters because, I don't know, there were enough other people there that were like, "Oh, I like carnival games. I'm gonna get that because that's like the Wii Sports thing."
Yeah.
Except
those people aren't here on the Switch. Those are regular core gamers.
Yeah.
They're like, "Oh, I get indie games here, and I can take them with me."
Yeah. I think at some point you end up with the double-edged sword of scale. Because right now, the Switch is doing well. Indies are doing really exceptional on the Switch, you know, 20, 30 times more than they sell on Steam or PS4.
Yeah.
But part of that is just because the playing field is not as wide.
Yeah.
If you come in with a reputation, people are really into that. If you don't have that reputation, you're going to struggle if you're not, don't have some other thing differentiating you, whether it's like, "Oh, we're Golf Story. We've got, you know, this cool new weird game that was just talked about on Nintendo Direct." Yeah. And so that's going to sell well. But if you're... I forget what the name is. The guy that makes Mutant Muds and all that.
Mm-hmm.
He put out a Mutant Muds collection. It's like, yeah, it's sold okay. And is putting out some other... Has put out some other stuff. And got the funding for Chicken Wiggle. Mm-hmm. For Switch. That happened with their Kickstarter succeeding. And he talks about on his blog time about sales, and they do fine enough to keep the studio going, but no massive sales for them. Like, it's partially just the way their games are marketed and all that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes the name, because Chicken Wiggle is a weird name.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that would get my attention.
Yeah, it's a weird name, but people I've seen just kind of say, oh, it sounds like mobile trash or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bomb Chicken coming out soon.
Yeah, there's something like that. He's got some other stuff as well. And they work on a pretty small scale. He talked about how if he did as well as... I forget what game it was. It was like Crypt of the NecroDancer or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's all well enough where they guaranteed themselves like $750,000 worth of sales. Mm. It's like, if we got that, we'd be good for a very long time.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not a ton of money in terms of what we see like the big boys do in the indies. Because you see, Rocket League is probably making millions upon millions at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And that game does really well on Switch. It's always up there near the top, as well as that weird versus Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Arcade version that apparently shows that, hey, Nintendo, your classic stuff, people would like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But also the eShop is not set up well, too.
No.
If you're not brand new, and you're not one of the best sellers, or you're not on sale, or you're not coming soon, you're hard to find.
Disappear, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the one of the things I was mentioning, is like, eventually, the Switch is not a guarantee that you're going to do well. It's like Chris said, you have to have a reputation, or you have to look incredibly unique, or whatever.
Yeah, or be cheap. But that's what Kameko has done really well. So like 200,000 copies. This was that $5 game that was available at the Switch's launch.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's like, oh, $5, I can do that.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good game, but it sold really well for them.
Yeah. There seems to be a really big difference between an indie game and an indie game, because Nintendo really pushes their indie stuff really well, and I guess it all comes down to like which of these indie developers can be shrewd enough to actually get their stuff on their directs or whatever it may be. Like, this is one of the reasons why I really want to have Dan Adelman on this show, so we can talk about the differences between the things that were happening when he was in, rather than how they're happening now with the Switch. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll try to get a hold of him again.
Yeah.
He hasn't been responding to my emails, so I don't know what I did to piss him off, so whatever. But yeah, the Switch has been a monumental success. I don't think anybody can deny that.
Yeah, it's definitely like the first year of the PS4 as well, where all the indies were trying to get on. So Sony's like, well, we've got a new captive audience that maybe wasn't around for last gen.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll bring some of our PS3 stuff over, like they did with The Last of Us and God of War 3 and a few other games.
Yeah.
It's like those did really well because... Yeah. You got this whole new audience that wasn't around for the last time you were putting out games.
Yeah.
Yep.
Even though the difference between how well the PS3 did and the Wii U did is hugely different. Because the PS3 pretty much matched the Xbox 360 by the end.
Yeah. But you see Nintendo doing exactly that, though, with the Wii U ports, Bayonetta, Mario Kart 8, Splatoon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as well as even bring some 3DS stuff up there.
Yeah.
I think they could do a better job of mirroring that stuff a bit better.
Yeah.
So sounds like the 3DS is going to be selling huge for too much longer. I would not be surprised if the 3DS successor is a Switch Lite.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
would totally see that.
Yeah. Hey, you got all those Switch games? You want to make them easier to take with you? Don't have to worry about the Joy-Cons breaking or have a better battery life, all that sort of stuff. Like, here's a Switch Lite.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can give it to your kid, they can try and flush it down the toilet, and it'll still work.
I mean, it's a no-brainer, and I'd be very surprised if they don't do that sometime.
And that gets you around this stupid thing that happened with the Wii U and the 3DS, where some stuff was cross-buy, but not much of it at all.
Yeah.
Nope.
oftentimes the stuff that you wanted to be crossed by, like the virtual console stuff that appeared on both, like you had to pay again.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure next year we'll see some form of a fully portable version of the Switch.
Yeah.
Now would be way too early. I mean, it's only been out for a year. But yeah, it'll be a good way to, like, you know, just have everything centralized to one platform. Mm-hmm, definitely.
Like, but hey, February 2019, here's a new way to Switch.
Yeah.
Then people get, when I bring this up on the internet, people get real mad. It's like, but it doesn't have the Switch thing. You can't take the Joy-Cons off. It's like, oh shit, but you'd still be able to sync that up. You would have the Bluetooth or whatever to sync it up really easily. Yeah. You could still play with the Pro Controller while it's sitting on its stand or whatever.
Yeah.
If you want. It's like, you could still have compatibility with all those accessories.
Yep.
It just wouldn't... It would be a little bit more sturdy and more portable. Yeah. I think you could put in your pocket and not have to worry about your $300 device getting scratched up.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to mention is, you know, we were mentioning the overall power of the Switch in the first part of the conversation, but I do think that the fact that it's significantly not as strong also sort of gives Nintendo sort of a creative advantage, because they know exactly what the limitations are. They don't really have to try to push anything, because they've been using the same pretty much foundation since the Wii U. So with that in mind, you know, games like Zelda, games like Mario Odyssey, like, they're as good as they are because they push the Switch to, you know, to the maximum they can possibly do.
Almost and too much in the case of Zelda.
If we can see that with other games moving forward, you know, the sky's the limit with what they can do.
Yeah, the major problem I see is the people that want everything to come to the Switch are not that exactly too cognizant of the power difference between the PS4 and Xbox One and the Switch. So, why is Monster Hunter World not on the Switch? It's like, because
it would melt.
Yeah, it's like, instead of having all the areas segmented in Monster Hunter, they're all one big world. You can run around without load times. The monsters look real good, all this. You'd have to do a lot of work to redesign all those assets for a 1080p 720 device.
Yeah,
It's like, you're not going to get everything, even though they're bringing, you know, Doom and Wolfenstein and all that. A lot of that's just due to the id Tech being better at scaling.
Yeah,
whereas Capcom, it takes them forever to port stuff over to local devices because they are very set in their ways.
Yeah, the limitations lend the Switch to a certain kind of game. You know, and
RPGs.
RPGs, action games, you know, stuff that's... I wouldn't consider the Switch to be the ideal platform for the huge multi-gigabyte AAA type titles.
No.
You're seeing those show up, but, you know, the Doom on the Switch is compromised. Wolfenstein on the Switch will be compromised. It's not where I would want to play those games.
No.
I mean, Wolfenstein 2 friggin' has issues running on the Xbox One X. Well,
yeah.
No. So, yeah. But, yeah, it means that the when you get a Switch, you're jumping into a platform that's going to have a very specific kind of catalog. Mm-hmm. And if you're okay with that, then that is the platform for you. Unfortunately, a lot of people are showing that that is, in fact, what they want.
Yeah. So. A lot of people are fine with compromises. I think that's always been the console thing. It's like, oh, we're going to get these PC things. They're going to be a little bit compromised, though now the differences are a lot more minor than it used to be, like when Diablo came out on the PS1. That was ridiculously different. especially when it's like the save took up an entire memory card. So it could just remember all the crap you picked up.
Yeah.
That's how a lot of sports games were. It's like, oh, here's your Madden memory card, because that's all it's going to be on this one.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's fine. I loved a lot of PSP stuff. It's like, oh, here's the portable version of Rainbow Six Vegas. That controlled a bit differently because the PSP doesn't have dual sticks, but it was a really neat version of that. And that stuff can be really cool when you see how they retrofitted these games and the visual styles in these systems onto a portable or a lesser system. Because sometimes it works really well, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. So. And then we can get to, well, this is kind of an area that's contentious to in a lot of people's eyes, and that's virtual reality. The only console maker right now that's actually doing it is Sony. Microsoft has a console that is more than capable of doing VR with the Xbox One.
That was like half of the point. When they initially announced it, it was like, hey, we can do full VR, no compromises, and we can do full 4K, no compromises.
Yeah, they haven't done it yet.
And they're like, oh, what VR?
Yeah.
We're here for mixed reality.
Yeah. Which is the same thing.
Yeah. Mm. It's them trying to have a better camera on the outside so you can potentially see better outside of it.
Yeah.
For whatever mixed type stuff you want to do. Because I think the Vive has that as well. That's usually just for so you can see your space around you. It'll tell you, hey, you're about to fucking hit your desk. Stop.
Yeah. But yeah, Sony has actually been pretty good with PlayStation VR support.
As much as I see people on the internet like, oh, it's the new Vita, they're just discounting all these games because they're getting out of it, and then they fucking announce a bunch of games. Like, no, just shut the fuck up, you idiots.
Yeah.
Stop trying to fucking pigeonhole this stupid thing.
It's weird because people really want VR to fail. Understand what that attitude comes
it's
from.
It's the same thing that happened with 3D, with motion controls, where people feel threatened that their way of playing games is going to be completely taken over, and that definitely was a thing that was pushed on VR early on.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is how we're going to play games from now on. It's like, no, at least not right now. Yeah. Not for a while, at least, because the tech just isn't there. The Vive is barely getting to wireless, and that with that Vive Pro stuff, and it's going to set you at least $1,000 down, not counting the PC. And that's a hell of a commitment to make.
Yeah, a lot of stuff has to change for VR to become really affordable, and basically the cost of the headsets really does need to come down. And, well, for that to happen, the cost of producing them does have to come down. And that means a lot of
tech to just mature and get easier to produce at good quality at cheaper prices.
Yeah. Mm.
And you're not getting your wireless PlayStation VR in 2019. It's not going to happen. Not unless you want to pay like $600 or $700 for that.
Yeah.
So right now
I think where we are right now as far as VR goes is basically where we were in 1999 with cell phones. We're at the Motorola StarTAC era of VR.
Yeah,
that's a good way of putting it.
It's very it's good for what it is.
Yeah.
But we're not at the full potential of
we're not at the smartphone phase.
Yeah.
We're at the you can play Snake on it.
Yeah.
Snake and Solitaire. That's what you can do right now.
In fact, I think you can actually play Snake on PlayStation VR.
Yes, I played Minesweeper.
So.
That was in the relaxation app. They have some games in there, and one is basically Minesweeper, except it's hex grid based.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I ever understood how to play Minesweeper. Because I don't think whatever Minesweeper versions come with Windows these days, like never, or back in like Windows 98, never really explained itself well.
Yeah,
people just understood it, and I was like, okay, there's a 1, there's a 2. I clicked on the bone. Okay. I'm just going to quit out here. I'm going to go back to playing Spider Solitaire. That's because that's my casual game of choice. I think even that's kind of selling it short because the stuff we get is way more impressive than playing Snake on a cell phone in
99. Mm-hmm.
But it's at the same time, it's like it's not the fact that it's impressive or not. It's we're at the very beginning of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've not seen what this can really do.
Yeah. Like VR in the 90s is like the brick phones in the 80s. Yeah,
exactly.
And now VR now, I would actually say, is probably like the flip phone. We are kind of there. You got a lot of stuff you can do. You can text and take pictures, but you don't have the smartphone yet.
Yeah.
You don't have the thing that can do the thing that makes everything. Because even the smartphone wasn't the smartphone yet. Because the iPhone launched without an app store.
Yeah.
Think about what your phone can do right now. The iPhone launched without an app store.
Yeah.
We talked about essentially a phone on Let's Weekend that was coming out that had no apps. It's like that's
no
kind of what
connectivity.
An iPhone was at launch, and you paid $600 for that.
Yeah.
And people were mad.
Yeah.
When they released the next one, it was like $400 or whatever. It was cheaper. So they had to like refund people's money.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what the fuck? I bought into this and you fucked me over. It's like, welcome to Appletown.
Yeah.
Yeah, VR is really cool right now for people that know what they're getting into. It's not a general purpose device just yet, but I think it will get there.
Yeah.
It won't take over your console gaming or your handheld gaming or your PC gaming. It won't negate all that, make it baby games. But the stuff that it does really well right now does really well. Like super hot VR, that's an amazing experience. We've had Matrix games, and those never felt like the Matrix.
Yeah.
Nope.
Like a dumb action game that had some cool stuff in it, but then you could do nothing that was really cool about the Matrix. Here, I've played Super Hot VR, and I'm like dodging bullets in the way that Neo did, and throwing coffee mugs and shooting them with guns and doing all sorts of stupid shit that's really fun.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's an awesome thing that I didn't think VR would be able to do. When I initially got it, and now it's here, it's like, okay, this is a new starting point for what we can do in the future.
Yeah.
A new level of interactivity that you don't get in regular games.
Yeah.
It's not possible because that's a lot of assets to generate and systems to design to be able to pick stuff up. And that becomes real apparent when you play like Skyrim.
Yeah.
It's like Skyrim's a very rigid game. And suddenly having two hands that can move around freely that aren't just tied to one cursor in the middle of your screen.
Mm.
That you have to look at specific stuff. It's like, I can pick up stuff without looking at it in Skyrim. Yeah. That's a huge change.
Mm.
As well as the teleporting stuff, which breaks the encumbrance system. Because when you're over-encumbered, it just limits your teleports from being able to teleport farther distances to just a short distance.
Yeah.
Which just means I can quickly warp around real fast, like a faster run.
Yeah.
And do it all in VR while encumbered, and I don't have to care about having too much stuff.
Yeah.
Except when I try to go sell it, and then I have to go through all that, but that's Skyrim.
Yeah.
That's not really the VR part. That's just them trying to make the Skyrim stuff work in it.
Yeah.
And, that's the sort of stuff that VR can do really well. It's just only going to get better from here.
Yeah, I mean, I think the foundation for VR is definitely already there. It's just a matter of, like, you know, think of a big old box of Legos and you just go ahead and pour them on the ground. That's pretty much what you have with VR. Like, somebody has to take those blocks and turn it into something cool, something beautiful.
Yeah,
and while we've seen, like, you know, some cool stuff being built, we haven't seen that definitive architecture yet. And that's the main thing that you have to know when you get into it. Not only that, it's not only the price, but there's a whole bunch of other things. Like there's the comfort. All of these helmets fucking suck. The best thing I've tried out was the HTC Vive, and this was at an IMAX VR theater in Los Angeles where they actually put you into a room and play with your friends there. And that's another thing, you know, if you decide to invest in VR, you also have to have your own personal space in order to really enjoy it. In the case of PlayStation Move, what makes it difficult is the fact that not only do you have to have your space, but once you put the helmet on, you have to have somebody give you the controller, somebody give you the Move controllers, or whatever it may be. Like, none of this is convenient. And, you know, when you're paying $300, $400, $500, maybe even $1,000 and all this equipment, and, you know, it doesn't feel good or you don't have the room for it, you aren't really going to use it. I bought my VR at launch, and I've probably only used it twice, mainly because I don't want to have to take it out and reconnect them all again, because I have such a small space to use them in. And not only that, but, you know, the content that you get to try out is not really cheap. They're cheap now, because they actually just had a few campaigns going on, but, you know, there's a whole bunch of different hoops to get through. But the bottom line is that if you want to get into VR, whether you're a developer, a publisher, or even a gamer, it's something that you really have to invest yourself with as far as time, convenience, and, you know, how long you want to be in it. Like, it's funny that people are saying they want to see VR fail, but at the same time, it's not going to succeed unless people stay in it. If they fail, that's it. So
yeah, we're definitely in an interesting place with VR, especially with Ready Player One just coming out in theaters. So I think that is going to be a hell of a push for it.
I'd be really interested to see what the sales numbers for the Vive and PSVR are in a few months after
Because the number one problem is sort of showing people what VR is like without having, be able to somehow figure out how to, get 300 million people in the U.S. to try it out. So that's not going to happen. You're going to probably have like a million people here that own it and are able to show like their friends and family what it's like, and you're still going to have, hundreds of millions of people still not able to try it out. But then you have Ready Player One, and shows like, this is what the potential of what we can do in 20, 30 years. Okay. So in like 20, 30 years, that's potentially what we can do with VR. Hmm. We're not there yet, but even just tech-wise, like things like the omnidirectional walking
treadmill.
Mm-hmm. So that, like, here's how you solve some of your space problem is you just have this one specific space right beside you, or right below you that you can walk, and it goes in anywhere. And they're kind of working on that stuff. It's definitely
that exists.
There.
Yeah. That multi-directional treadmill exists.
Yeah, it's just the whole problem is you have to get that all supported. Like, there's a lot of accessories for like the Vive and the Rift on PC, but it's the developer having to have confidence that you have that stuff, and that's where the problem is. So it's future evolutions of these systems where that stuff gets built in or comes with it. PlayStation 5 will be a good chance for Sony to have a full system that can fully support the VR stuff. Yeah. Because when you launch into PlayStation VR, you just see the same dashboard as a 2D projection. Yeah. Whereas I believe on Rift and Vive, they have like full 3D sort of VR storefronts set up in those.
That's just software, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if Sony really wanted to, they could basically rejigger that into something VR specific.
Yeah, I think their resources are better spent on the games themselves.
Yeah.
Because
I do want to point out the fact that even though I don't use my PSVR all that much, Sony has been supporting it way more than I thought they would, and it's really impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely they have seen the success of the titles that have come out. Not everything is selling well because a lot of stuff like just indies, people put out stuff with zero marketing or information out there, and people are like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And that's not a great way to succeed, people.
No.
If I Google search your game's name and all I get is the developer's site, you fucked up.
Yeah. Should be some reviews and stuff like that. People should be playing it.
YouTube videos and all that. Other people covering the game because they also found out it exists. Like, no, if you don't do any of that, then your chances of selling well are not going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Unless you're making games very, very bare bones on the cheap, it's probably not going to work out too well.
Yeah.
And definitely with VR, it's going to be nice to see how the sort of future generations of these games are coming, because we're just starting to get some of the second waves from some of the bigger developers, the people that made the London shooter game on PlayStation VR Worlds. That is, their next game is a sequel to that. It's called, I think it's Blood and Truth. Truth and Blood, I forget what the specific order of that. And it's sort of a cool little follow-up to that, and that's their second thing. It's like, okay, we can actually make this into a full thing, and we're going to do something really cool with this. And some of that hasn't worked out, like the Inpatient, the sort of Until Dawn tie-in, apparently wasn't that great, but it also just got a price drop to $15 on PSN and at retail, so that's going to be an interesting way to see that, because I'll probably pick it up when it's on sale now. At the MSRP is a lot cheaper. Because it's less like trying to fulfill the expectations of a $30 game versus maybe like an $8 game.
Yeah.
So those are going to be very different. And I typically just buy stuff because it's like, ooh, this has VR, it's on sale, I'm going to see how this goes. Usually it goes all right. Like, most devs make all right games. Like, most indie games you check out are probably at least all right.
Yeah.
Not always going to find the great stuff, but, you know, a lot of those all right games can do some cool stuff that they just don't have the time or budget to flesh it out into a really amazing thing.
Mm.
That's how we got Rocket League, because their first game was pretty good. Mm. I had people that liked it, like the core concept. It was a little bit too focused on, like, campaign challenge missions versus the multiplayer. And when they got a chance to make a sequel, they said, you know what, we're going to go all in on the multiplayer. Yeah. And it worked out really well.
Yep.
That's some of the cool stuff we can see with VRs as people get more competent, more funding and all that. It'll be pretty cool to see what these guys come up with.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So, I mean, we could probably keep talking about virtual reality for another 2-3 hours because it's really a huge topic. But we'll move on, because what else happened during this generation is 4K became a thing.
Yep.
Yep.
To the point where, you know, you pretty much can't really buy a 1080p TV anymore. You really have to look for it, because pretty much all the TVs now, even the bargain basement ones, are pretty much 4K. They've just kind of become a thing. And to go along with that, well, we've seen Microsoft and Sony release 4K bumps. Well, yeah, 4K versions of their consoles, the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X last year. And it's a very different approach between Sony and Microsoft on how they actually handled it.
Yeah. Yeah, Sony's gone for more the affordable machine with the reasonable 4K checkerboard upgrades.
Yeah.
Saves more on hard drive space while getting mostly good enough there for the upgrade.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas on Xbox One X, it's $500. That's a big deal. And you get a lot of power for that for the games that get the 4K upgrades.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because people are complaining about the prices of both the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One, and I should point out that they're exactly the same prices as the original Xbox and PS4 launched at, so
yeah,
that's a thing.
Yeah, though, so. Obviously the big thing is that they're competing against now their original devices that have gotten price drops as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like the PS4 is $300, I think Xbox One is the same. And those go on sale regularly for $200.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, I'm going to spend $500 on this 4K Xbox One. I can get it the other one for $200. And, you know, it depends on how much you have the 4K TV or want that extra power.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you're seeing people go out and actually spend that. It seems
like the future-proofing thing is definitely big.
Yeah,
That's why I own both of them, despite not having a 4K TV.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'll just buy this and fuck it, I'll be ready for the next TV I get.
Yeah.
And which has really brought an interesting angle to this stuff. Because obviously you get Digital Foundry and all that going like, here's what this game looks at 4K, oh my god, this is amazing, oh, here's the differences. And I'm like, yeah, but what about 1080p? Because I played Red Dead Redemption, the upgrade on that, and I almost got sick in a way that VR sometimes makes sick when it goes bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, recorded videos of that. I found out there's a performance mode for that supposedly emphasizes on performance and all that. It just looked like a shittier version of that. Because it's like, oh, here's the original Xbox 360 textures or whatever. So, everything's all fucking blurry, as well as the background, like, stuttering. And it's like, oh, God, I'm just having a worse time because this looks shittier.
Yeah.
At least if you stopped on the 4K upgrade, it looked great when you weren't doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this looks awesome. Yeah. And then,
it looks awesome.
And then when I move, it just goes, oh. So I found out, I showed videos and tried to find other people, see if they noticed this. And it's like, oh, yeah, I noticed this. It doesn't affect me this way. It's like, okay, at least I'm not that crazy.
Yeah.
My mind is broken by this game, but otherwise, people are at least noticing this thing.
Yeah.
So that's at least comforting. I was just like, I just kind of wish I could have a version of this game that didn't have the upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
It looked okay before.
Yeah.
I don't think there is necessarily a way to undo it.
Yeah. But given given that we have these two consoles, though, I don't think we see the PS5 or Xbox One 2, whatever we're going to call it.
Yeah.
we won't see it 2019. I would be very surprised if we see it in 2020.
I would say 2020 would probably be the earliest. Yeah. I think these upgrades are good enough to last for a couple more years.
Yeah,
because it's pretty good for what it is now. It's not like the end of the PS3, Xbox 360 generation where the games just look like shit on consoles. Or they ran like shit because developers like, well, the PC is kind of the main thing right now, and we'll just make these games look as close to the PC version. Frame rate be damned. And that was the worst thing. That's why I kind of like that they remastered a lot of those games. I had those problems like the Saints Row games and such. That was nice. And now it's like everything runs fine. There's not very many like shitty frame rate games at this point. Devs kind of figured it all out.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, you know, you got Final Fantasy 15. It still has a few problems here and there, but it's Final Fantasy 15, so you probably don't want to play that anyway.
But
that's just my opinion.
Yeah. I was playing some Just Cause 3 on my PS4 Pro, and it runs pretty okay. It's not great. I kind of wish they had gotten a chance to do like an update on that.
Yeah.
Because that game really should not have been left in the state it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume that's probably more of a contractual thing between Square Enix and Avalanche Studios. And kind of going back to the 1080p stuff, like the most impressed I've been with games, it's probably been on PS4 Pro in 1080p. Like Horizon Zero Dawn, when I saw that in 1080p on PS4 Pro, it was like, holy shit, I don't even have the 4K, but this fucking blows me away. Yeah. The same has been true for God of War.
Yep.
It's like, holy crap. Okay. I can see like all of Kratos' pores. Ashy covered pores. It's really well done. I think Sony's devs have been better about the tech stuff, and I think it's also just because Sony has set up that infrastructure amongst their internal teams with the ICE team that is specifically set up to help them answer questions about the tech stuff, which I believe is headed in Naughty Dog's studio. And that obviously makes a lot of sense because the Uncharted games look amazing last gen and were kind of some of the best looking stuff. And you'd want to have, you know, the wizards help out with the rest of the studios.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Microsoft kind of just says, hey, make your stuff look real good. Our system is basically PC, so just do whatever the hell you want. It works out for the most part, but then you get games like ReCore that ran like shit. State of Decay, even when they remastered that game runs like shit on Xbox One. It's like, why does this not have an Xbox One X update? Because you're selling the sequel to that. You're telling people, hey, go play this. It's on Game Pass. And most people play that.
And they play it, and it's like,
this runs like shit on an Xbox One. The sequel's just going to run shit.
Well, to be fair, that game ran like shit on Xbox 360, so...
And it's like, why did you remaster it if you're not going to do much to it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just shitty remasters.
Yeah.
We're still waiting on Master Chief Collection. Get its update sometime this year to make it run okay on Xbox as a whole.
Yeah.
Fix a lot of the issues that people had with that. That's 4 years now. We're still waiting on that.
Yeah. So, still, it's kind of a shame that it took that long. Yeah. At least it's going to get done.
Microsoft as a whole is kind of still recovering from that E3 2014. That's when they announced the Master Chief Collection. They showed off more of Crackdown, which you're still waiting on. Yeah. They announced just the like weird remade sequel thing that didn't exist.
Yeah. Oh. It died.
Well, the cutscene, the trailer they showed, that game did not exist. That had nothing to do with the game that was actually being made. That's a real weird thing to do. Because the devs are like, wait, what? What's this thing? We got to make this thing now.
Ever done that.
Yeah. And then that whole thing went bad, and then they just remade the game and add microtransactions to it for the multiplayer. What else? There was what's the platinum game that got canceled?
You scaled.
Yes, that was also announced there. It's like, oh, that did not go well at all.
I got your dead rep sighing.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, this was just overall kind of a shitty conference for Microsoft. Yeah, as they tried to, you know, climb out of the Xbox One hole. And they're still recovering from that. As we, you know, look at their first party offerings, it's like, yeah, here's Sea of Thieves. It's all right.
It's kind of okay.
It'll probably get there at some point, but most of the people don't seem to care at this point.
Yeah.
I've got State of Decay 2, which some people are excited about. I don't know how well it's going to do. It has zombies, so that's probably going to do fine.
Yeah.
But as somebody that really likes State of Decay, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Mm. It's coming out around the same time as the Dark Souls remaster, Pixel Junk Monsters 2, and Detroit Become Human. It's like, okay, you've got competition here. I got three other games I'm interested in. You've got to somehow prove you're way better than those three. And I don't know how likely that is.
Yeah. It's similar to Nintendo fans of the Wii U hoping for Captain Toad to be a Game of the Year. It's that bad.
That game was really good, but...
Oh yeah, I loved it. But,
It's not the savior of the platform.
No.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, now it's like, where's Crackdown? That was delayed from being a launch for the Xbox One X.
Mm.
And now we have no idea when it's coming out. It's like, how bad was that game to get pushed in November, and it's 6 months later, and we still don't know when it's coming out?
Yeah.
We know what Crackdown's going to be. So.
Yeah, we know what Crackdown's going to be. Which is cool. I've been excited about that because they made the original game backwards compatible, and I'm playing it like, yeah, I kind of don't want to restart this all, but I also don't want to sit here and jump around an empty world and hoping to stumble upon the remaining orbs that I'm missing and max out the driving because that was terrible. So I never did that. Now my driving is shittier because it's not like the other stuff. It's like a level 2, everything else was at 4 or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, this game was cool 10 years ago.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what Microsoft and Sony both do at E3 this year.
Yeah.
Hopefully Sony will decide to show up, because, you know, last year they kind of didn't.
Got some interesting stuff coming out from them.
Yeah, and it's going to also be fun to see... how much the PS4 Pro gets support. I'm not seeing that as actually a big problem lately. It seems like even some of the smaller publishers are supporting the Pro.
Yeah.
So
they haven't been doing anything amazing, but Sony has definitely pulled their weight with Horizon and God of War, and I'd imagine Detroit and Spider-Man and all those other will be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sony's got a good year lined up for the rest of the year. There's still some stuff we don't know when it's coming out, so that'll probably be all what E3 is good at doing. Xbox, we're kind of like, okay, we know you got some stuff here. When the hell is any of it coming out?
Yeah. What's interesting is Microsoft bought an entire theater, so I don't know what they plan on doing with that space.
They didn't. Well, yeah, they did buy it, but not specifically for that.
No, they sponsored it all for a while now. They're just we're just gonna rent this out for the week of E3 and do all our stuff here.
I should probably actually clarify how that actually came to be, because it's the Nokia Theater.
Yeah.
Microsoft had bought Nokia a while back.
That was their whole plan. That's basically all they've gotten out of it.
Yeah, liquidated the assets of there, but they still kept the theater, so it's like, okay, well, we got this. We may as well use it for E3. So
yeah, they got the theater, and then like the 30 people are like, we like the Windows Phone.
Yeah,
that's all they got.
It's like three people. So, anyways. That kind of brings us to backwards compatibility, which is kind of contentious between the two companies.
That's not even...
battle.
Oh, yeah.
This is not even close.
I'll basically spell it out. Microsoft shits all over Sony when it comes to backwards compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
They actually have it.
Yeah.
Three generations worth on one platform is kind of a big deal. I was worried about the original Xbox support for the Xbox One, because they released like one initial batch of games and then went silent.
Yeah,
but that seems to have started back up again. So
it seems like they're kind of doing it like they did on the Xbox 360, where it's like just do waves of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I just hope they don't spread them out too far between. Yeah. You know, like keep them going every week or so if they can. So that's what they kind of have been doing with the Xbox 360 stuff.
Mm. So, I assume the licenses and all that makes it a lot easier for Xbox 360 versus going back to that old stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, hey, what about Crazy Taxi 3? But it's like, oh, yeah, there's the music. Yeah, they haven't released any new versions of Crazy Taxi with the music.
Yeah, except for that mobile game. But.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also like a 30-second clip.
Yeah.
I assume that's a lot easier to license than what all music we did on this thing 15 years ago that nobody remembers.
Meanwhile, on the Sony platform, PS1 support doesn't exist.
No.
PS2 support is limited to buying whatever titles they happen to put up on the marketplace.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a shame, because the PS2, you know, emulation or whatever they're doing to actually make that work is really solid.
Mm-hmm.
It's arguably the same.
I'm wondering why they couldn't, I keep pestering them to release that as a standalone, so you could basically just put your own discs in and play it.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Don't care about trophies. But, and that's kind of how Microsoft does it, but to a more limited extent. You know, if you have disc of a game that's supported, you just throw it in and you download the thing. But the fact that it doesn't have PS1 support is inexcusable, to be honest. Mm-hmm. That's like the Sony's legacy there. You know, they've had one of the most successful platforms in the industry with the PS1 and PS2, and they're really just kind of, you know, shitting all over that by not supporting it. So yeah, no, it's clearly Microsoft is winning that battle, and as a result, actually kind of winning fans over. So yeah, I'm not sure if it's not going to be enough to obviously, you know, take the lead away from Sony, but yeah, every little bit helps, and that's what Microsoft has been doing. So
for me, it's DX updates. Like, that Red Dead Redemption thing was just a bummer. Now it's like, do I have to worry about
it?
This?
You can't
for
really
the...
not play it without it.
Yeah, I just wish you could turn it off.
That'd be nice.
Because knowing what is updated and what changes are made for this stuff, like how would in any way it's improved, this is completely unknown to the end user.
Yeah.
People found that debug thing, and it's like they couldn't barely read it. Like, it says Orbis here. That must mean it has an update. It's like, I don't know. We don't know, because we're not devs. We don't know what any of this fucking shit means. Yeah. I just have to wait for Digital Foundry to tell us, hey, what happened? And they only care about 4K.
Yeah.
And it's like, for me, it's like, I don't know. Yeah. This Fallout 3 at least runs pretty well. It looks okay. Yeah. So I guess that's what they did. They made it not run like shit.
Not suck.
Same thing they did with Oblivion, where it's like, okay, these eyes are really shiny and high def. Everyone else is like a muddy face. I don't know. Yeah. Sometimes these games can only look as good as their assets did.
Yeah.
Their full potential. Which for some of those early games from the Xbox 360 is not great at all. We've come a long way.
Yeah.
There's some high def muddy faces now on Skyrim.
Yep. Very high def muddy faces, but you know.
Yeah.
But at least we can play them still. Yeah. That's what's important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think the one thing I do find a bit of a bummer on Xbox One as far as Xbox 360 stuff is they never did cross-buy. To let you bring allow devs to bring their old stuff to the new platform in a way that they could essentially remake it themselves and offer it for free to those people that originally had it.
Yeah.
Because thing like Spelunky on the PS3 and Vita got updated for the PS4, and it's like that game is completely different than the XBLA version that is backwards compatible on Xbox One.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the daily run stuff, which is huge. Yeah. That's a huge reason to play that game, as well as like the pro mode HUD, which just shows you like the timer stuff for achievements and trophies and all that, as well as just lessen some of the HUD elements.
Yeah.
So you can focus more on seeing what's going on around you. Like, some of that stuff was really cool, and it's really cool to get the upgrade for free. They have a couple of exceptions. I think Castle Crashers got that remaster.
Yeah.
That was free for like 2 weeks, and that was it. It's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
That stuff is not great, and I wish they allowed those devs to have a little more control of that stuff, because we could have probably gotten Mark of the Ninjas remastered a lot earlier than we are.
Yeah.
And that would have been free for those that had it on Xbox 360. Because it's not getting PC, as far as we know.
Yeah.
They're just selling it again. It's like, yeah, that's fine, but what about us that had it before?
Yeah.
And I think Sony's done a good job with that stuff, because people are obviously have a Vita or a PS3 that want to upgrade to PS4, and like, oh, here's a whole suite of games that you can get for free to start you off. And that was really cool at the launch, like having Flower and Journey, Flow and Sound Shapes. Like, oh yeah, I got to play Sound Shapes and get 3 Platinums out of that game. And that gave me some cool stuff to do. And I think that stuff is really neat. Which obviously gets a little weird when you get the sort of Vita cult acting like the Switch cult and be like, where's our game on Vita? You said there was going to be a Vita version. Why are you so lazy? Fuck up.
Yeah.
It's hard to make games on multiple platforms, especially if you're a small dev.
Mm.
Which I think Cosmic Star Herald just got announced for Vita. I think it's coming out this week? It's either this week or sometime in May.
I think it's May.
Yeah, just going to check it real quick. Mm. But yeah, that's really cool. It's like, oh, here's this whole new version I can just take with me. It's not as elegant as the Switch, but for my own commuting purposes, it's actually about the same. Because I can take a Vita with me, stick it in my pocket, whereas a Switch, I can't do that. Yeah. Unless I buy some Jenko jeans.
Yep.
Let's see. Oh, April 24th, actually. So it is out on Tuesday. Yeah, that's free for people that own it on PS4.
Yeah.
And for Vita specific people, it's like, oh, now I can buy the game. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And sometimes they give you separate trophy lists to do, like, oh, hey, here's a whole new reason to play it.
Yeah.
It usually comes at the cost of not being able to transfer your save over.
Yeah.
Which, whatever, it's fine for the most part. That's a really cool thing that Sony offers. I wish Microsoft was more on the ball with early on, because they were very much, what are indies? We don't allow them on here. That'd be published by a big dev.
Yeah.
That was a really weird thing for them to do, because it led to a lot of indies saying, you know what? Fuck this. We're going to PS4.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, yeah, you can be, you know, small devs working out of your basement in your underwear or whatever. Just bring your games over here.
Yeah.
But now Microsoft has in gear now, but there's still a lot of indies that just don't want to do it on Xbox.
Yeah.
Or whatever reasons they have now.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly, we like working on PS4 and Vita, now Switch and Steam.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, Steam, people are starting to turn away from that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. That's a whole other matter. Anyways.
Yep.
So, we'll get to our last bit here, which is, is there still life left in these systems? And how long do you think we're going to keep going with this particular generation before we get to PS5 and Xbox One, 2?
I'm giving another couple years at least.
Yeah.
At the very least. I mean, not only did we have this 4K half step, but we're at an interesting point where the developers are finally making games that, like, take full use of what each console can do. I mean, like, you look at 2017, which I'll say it over and over again. If it wasn't the best gaming year ever, it was at least second place, because I was playing something every day. Like, it was fucking insane.
You had a list of games you wanted to get to if you could get over the mountains of the stuff you already had.
Yeah. And it's I still haven't managed to climb that mountain.
Yeah, I still got the mountain. Ironically, that also plays in the God of War as a plot line. It's like, we got to get to the mountain. Oh, God, I got to get to the mountain. Except Danner's got, you know, Kunio in front of the mountain.
I mean, we're 5 years in and Rockstar hasn't even published an original game yet. So,
nope.
You know, that just goes to show that there's a whole lot coming.
That also shows how long the legs on GTA 5 was.
Oh, yeah.
Because totally. Last-gen's version sucked, and it did not really hit its peak until it got the PS4 and Xbox One and Steam. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, oh, now this plays pretty well. And now it might be the best-selling game of all time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At least
no small part to GTA Online. Let's be honest about that.
And how fucking ridiculous that all is. You see a lot of like free-to-play games when they sell their currency, they put it on sale for, you know, maybe up to half off.
Mm-hmm.
Rockstar does hardly any of that. They got maybe 15%. I see on PSN it's like 15% for PlayStation Plus, 5% for non-PlayStation Plus. Let me remind you, you need PlayStation Plus to play that game online. That's the weird thing about looking at those sales. Like, Overwatch goes on sale and sometimes has a non-PS Plus discount. It's like, what are you getting if you buy that?
Oh, you're getting a game and then a PlayStation Plus ad when you try to play it.
You get the bot modes, and it's like, it's not that much of the game. That's very little.
Yeah.
It's like, sometimes these devs don't think about what they're pricing their games at.
I don't think you can play Overwatch offline.
No, but...
No, you can't.
I think there are certain modes that you can play without PlayStation Plus.
Because
it's like, you're technically online, but it's not like the Xbox 360 where it's like,
yeah.
Oh, if you don't have Xbox Live Gold, you can't do leaderboards. And it's like, what the fuck was this shit? You can't message people on your fucking social network service you supposedly claim this is without paying up. Like, you can't even use it, the website to send people messages. Like, what the hell kind of backwards world was this?
Yeah.
That was just 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That's so weird. But now, Microsoft's mostly there. Except Microsoft requires gold to play free-to-play games online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of irritating still.
It's like, wait, I have to pay to play my free game online. It's not like the games with gold games. These are the games that operate on servers independent of Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Path of Exile and some, you know, other stuff like that. You know.
Yeah, it's like, you should probably stop.
Yeah.
Just like we had to tell them to stop with charging for Netflix access.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, this stuff is free because that's how you get all the people. Yeah. It's like, you want to encourage people not to play the game on your platform? That's free? Like, hey, here's a good way to tell them to go fuck off.
Yeah. That's
it's the thing I hear about PS4 people all the time. It's like, oh, I don't have PS Plus. I just play, you know, Warframe Online, or now Fortnite, obviously, is the big thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, that's cool. That's cool that if you don't want to pay up the $60 for PS Plus and get the discounts and all that with it, as well as the online play, you still have a good selection of stuff to play online.
Yeah.
And that's really cool.
Yeah.
Especially like the MMOs, all the multiplayer games. I think even Elder Scrolls Online doesn't require PS Plus for its online.
No, I don't think it does.
Yeah, because that would be all Bethesda servers.
Yep.
Same with Final Fantasy 14 and that.
Hmm.
It's really cool how flexible that stuff is on Sony's end.
Yeah.
Of saying, hey, you know, we're understanding that you've put down, you know, a bunch of money for this. May not have the money for the PS Plus. Like, here's still a bunch of stuff to play online for free. I was like, yeah, no, they keep giving us the money, so we're going to keep taking it. But I think it would be good for them to ease up on some of that stuff, just keep refining that.
Yeah.
Which there's still a lot of people that just say, yeah, I think at some point they're not going to require gold to play online at all. It's like, I don't know about that. Game Pass isn't that great. It's not. I don't think it's doing that well yet. They're not gonna give up all that money, even though they're Microsoft. They could handle it, but I think it would be a good way for them to say to the heads at Microsoft, like, "Hey, you probably don't need us anymore because we're not bringing all this money." That's real weird.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they do with Xbox Live. It's something that's clearly now a very successful revenue stream for them. So they're not gonna want to give it up.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, if you get the if you buy a game on the PC, for instance, like, you know, Forza 7 on Windows Store, you also get the Xbox One version. And it's like, well, you can play the PC version online without paying.
Yeah, that's also the weird thing as well. It's like they have their whole Play Anywhere stuff.
Yeah.
But it's almost contradictory.
Yeah, because it's like, you can play anywhere, but if you want to play over here, you got to pay us more.
And you want to play the full game you purchased. You're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think they both have their strengths and weaknesses in this case. I think, for the most part, I think Microsoft has the infrastructure down, at least. It's a better experience.
For the most part.
Yeah.
I think the weird thing about tech at this point, especially network stuff, is people don't really realize how much all these systems are held together by strings. They can cut somebody can come along, just cut the right string, and it all falls apart.
Yeah.
Yep. For everybody, that's Google, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Nintendo, Sony, all this stuff.
Yeah.
That can easily fall down. It's the hard work of the people behind the scenes just trying to put up enough barriers between them and the people that want to do bad things.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what do you think? 2020, 2021 before the next gen officially starts? Is
pretty good.
Probably.
We had that weird supposed leak of PS5 stuff.
Yeah.
From a weird site called Semi-Accurate.
Oh, God.
It seems ironic.
Actually, they're pretty legit.
Yeah, though, don't they charge money for that information? It's like $1,000 to find it out.
Yeah, well, it's an industry. It's a semiconductor industry trade site.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I don't think anybody actually paid for it because we still don't know exactly what they said.
Yeah.
But people are like, oh, PS5, 2018. Like, no, they're not.
No, definitely
they're not anywhere close to that.
I don't think Sony even mentions it at E3 this year. It's
no, I don't even think next year either.
Yeah.
I think that's
so when do they mention it?
I can see them doing like another like PS4 type reveal in 2020. Like, hey, here's our new thing. Here's all our plans for it. Hopefully it's like anyway, it'll play, you know, all that stuff you like on your PS4. It's going to be coming over.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make that all nice and easy because we're staying on the same infrastructure.
Yeah.
And just replace everything I said with Mark Cerny speak. You're going to fall into a nice slumber, like, oh, yeah, this is all nice.
Yeah, stuff about butterflies.
It's my Mark Cerny ASMR.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. So, Dav, this was a hell of a discussion. And, I think this generation, on the whole, probably one of the better ones, despite all the, you know, crap that has surfaced amongst it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, AAA publishers are going to be AAA publishers, and they're going to do stupid things regardless of what anybody says.
Yeah.
But
the good thing is that people are more aware of it now.
Yeah, and people are willing to call them on it, and stuff is changing as a result of it. So,
Yeah.
So, good stuff.
And we've got access to some really awesome experiences.
Yep.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Stuff people, like, the beginning of this gen are like, oh, it's just going to be the same as PS3 and Xbox 360. It's just going to be like 10% looking better.
Dope.
And it's like, no. The shit they're doing in like Horizon and God of War and Gears 4 and all that, it's like, this is fucking crazy shit.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Even some of the indie stuff like Senua's Sacrifice is a spectacular looking game. So
yeah, like I don't think anybody was really thinking about, oh, you're going to want to plug it. Headphones and your controller,
yeah.
So you can hear all of this game.
Yeah,
and it wasn't some like gimmick Xbox Live indie game that's like, oh, there's no sound here. You have to just listen and figure out what the hell you're doing.
Mm.
Yep.
But
it's like this will be like very innovative audio design that nobody's ever done.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think that's gonna do it for this week, and we'll get to our picks of the week now because we don't have very many of them. I'll start us off with the release this week that I'm most looking forward to, which is BattleTech, and that's coming out on Tuesday. You can buy it on Steam, you can buy it on GOG, you can buy it on Green Man Gaming, which will give you a Steam code, and you'll pay less. So I don't know why you wouldn't want to buy it there. If you buy it between now and May 8th, you'll also get a copy of Shadowrun Returns. So,
yep.
Bonus. And that's it. And then you'll get tactical mech combat with management and, mercenary company management and stuff. So, yeah, looks awesome. So that's my pick, Battletech.
Yeah. All right, well, my pick, basically, it was something I discovered the other day going through TV tropes. So everybody is aware of Virtua Fighter. It's considered to be like the first 3D fighting game. I mean, by modern standards, it looks extremely primitive.
Mm-hmm.
When it came out in 1993, or was it 1992?
It was 93, I think.
93? Yeah. It was freaking mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Like, I remember first encountering it in Dave & Buster's when I was like, let's see, this is 1993, 1994, so I was like 8 years old.
Mm.
And just being blown away by the idea of there being like three dimensions in a fighting game.
Yep.
Like, you know, there were no sprites or anything. It was just the camera would go around and all the characters had, like, different sides to them. And you fought enough and you could knock them out of the ring and win that way. And it was just so awesome. But what a lot of people don't know is that this wasn't actually Sega's first three-dimensional fighting game. It was the first 3D fighting game with polygons. But they did actually do a 3D fighting game before Virtua Fighter, and it was called Dark Edge. It's probably closer to a actual three-dimensional fighting game than anything, than most of what's come out after it.
Yeah.
Basically, it was all sprite-based, but it used Mode 7. So, you know, the characters would actually go circle around each other, and you know, you could fight them, you know, obviously you had like two-dimensional, but it also like front to back and side to side. It was very like it, and this made it particularly unique because I don't think I've seen a game, mini games, fighting games since then that are entirely cyberpunk based, which is very much what Dark Edge was. It embraced the cyberpunk aesthetic. Now, if you actually, and I've got a long play, like, added, linked on there to watch, you can obviously see some of the issues with this game pretty quickly. Because the fact that it was three-dimensional meant that it could sometimes be a little hard to control.
Yeah.
Because, you know, since the thing is going around and side to side, sometimes it could be hard being able to, you know, keep track of where you're supposed to go in order to get closer to or further away from your opponent.
Yeah.
And also, the computer could be kind of a dick.
Yeah.
And be cheap as hell.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of things about this game that I do genuinely admire. Because I don't think we've really seen anything like this that has come out since.
This is something that,
this
is something that I think if Sega were to try to revive, we'll probably do pretty well.
The technology has gotten far better now.
Yeah,
so
they can actually pull it off now.
They don't really have to rely on some of the gimmicks that they had to use for the original release.
Yeah.
I will also say that I love the fact that you're basically playing Space Area as the bonus stage. And I did love the last boss too, because the last boss in this game is like a straight up like a Contra type boss.
Yeah.
And looks extremely difficult. But part of the reason I love this game, amongst other things, is that it's the Sega that I love. It's the Sega that's like really experimental and trying new things.
Yeah.
And you know, embracing those new things even if it doesn't quite work out as planned.
Yeah.
Putting their all into it even if, again, it doesn't quite work out that way.
Yeah.
And God, it just it's the Sega that I love, and it's the Sega that kind of lives again. So, yeah, it just check it out. It's good to watch.
Yep. All right. So, what do you got, Chris?
Yeah. So Sony has a good sale going on this week called Double Discounts. Which is named because the PS Plus discounts are twice what the regular discounts are.
Yep.
Which means some of the non-PS Plus prices are not great. But some of the PS Plus stuff is pretty good. Yeah, so I mentioned on Let's Weekend that Burnout Paradise is $30 on sale.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That is part of this sale. So that's sort of the first discount it's gotten, and it's a good price for that. Like Crash Bandicoot's $24. There's some good stuff here. Divinity Original Sin's 12, if you want to get ready for the sequel that's coming to PS4 later this year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That'll be a good place to start. There are some prices that are not great. A game that's always on sale as sort of a standard bearer is NBA Live 18.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's normally on sale for $4.49. Here it's $6 for some reason. I figured it would hit the same price it always hits at.
Yeah.
Bring some people in, but for whatever reason, they didn't do that.
Hmm.
I think another one like that is Carnival Games VR, which is normally on sale for like $6-$8. So like that, it's on sale for like 16.
Oof.
So it's like 25% off for PS Plus people, where it's been almost like 75% off. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Nobody should be fooled by this.
Yep.
But yeah, they got a lot of good stuff here. Like, all the Harvest Moon games are on PSP and PS4 are on sale. A bunch of indie stuff. There is Has-Been Heroes. That's pretty good. That was a Switch launch title.
Yeah.
It's on sale here for $8. It's pretty good. Yeah, another title that did not go on sale for as much as I thought it would is Mountain Blade Warband, which is a really weird PC game that is kind of like, hey, what if we made this open world RPG? Medieval styled, and it kind of had like a Dark Souls kind of combat system. It's not really modeled after that. It's a lot older than Dark Souls, but it kind of has that animation priority sort of thing, and very much kind of a focus on, you know, using your shield to block attacks while knowing when to, you know, initiate your own attacks, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's normally on sale for $5. It's on sale for $6. Not really much of an increase, but I bought that for $5, and it works pretty well on the controllers.
Yeah.
So that's a nice game people should check out at some point. And there's some more stuff like Sundered is $10 now. That game is really quite nice. Submerged is $2. Mm. It's a game I liked a lot. It's a game that's probably actually really good for that price. You're kind of in this sunken city that the world is kind of flooded. And so you're kind of going around the city in your boats to these different landmarks, finding collectibles generally, just climbing out the buildings in an Uncharted 4 kind of platforming style. It looks nice. It's not going to be the most technologically advanced game. Don't know where the devs are from, but I would assume they're a pretty small studio.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a nice little game. Let's see where they're from. Oh crap, where is this at? They're found in 2011. I think I have like 6 people here. Yeah, a bunch of veterans from other parts of the industry. And I don't know where they're from. Their about page does not say where. That would seem like a thing you would do in your about page.
Yeah, usually.
It's like, what's your studio about? Where's you from?
Yeah.
Okay, contact us. No, it's email shit. Okay, never mind.
They're from somewhere.
Yeah, they're from somewhere. It's white people, so I assume the UK probably. UK, Europe, or the US.
Yep.
Yeah, but yeah, there's some nice games here. People should check out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we'll wrap it up for this week. We apparently had nothing to talk about, but that kind of changed. If you like what we do here on the show, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast aggregator. You can also check us out at smashpad.com, where we have written content, and stuff like God of War reviews and stuff will be going up at some point. So with that, I'm Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Dan Rep Victoria.
And we'll see you next week on the Day Zero Update.